disclaimer, the views expressed by the guests on this podcast are not necessarily representative of Taxi Plus as a company. There may also be language that some viewers may find offensive.
Welcome to What Time You On Till, the podcast where we talk all things taxi, sponsored by leading industry news source Taxi Point. Coming up on today's episode, we interview YouTuber and licensed cabbie Tom the Taxi Driver, a little Welsh person shows up, and Ryan manages not to have a rant.
You should introduce Erin. She's the new Lauren. Lauren 2.0.
Yeah, so we have got a new person joining us for the podcast today, Lauren 2.0.
Excuse me.
Producer Erin.
That little tiny voice that you've just heard, a little tiny Welsh person. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Have you got a shot as well?
Yeah, I've got a camera.
Oh, so we will be able to see the little tiny Welsh person.
What makes it funnier is she was wearing a sheepskin jumper yesterday.
No, it wasn't sheepskin.
She looked like Shaun the Sheep.
It was Sherpa.
Well, it was Welsh.
It was Sherpa, sorry. No sheep jokes.
Oh, shearling.
Shearling. Is that what you call them?
Was it actually sheepskin? Sheepskin.
No. Sheepskin. Do you mean wool?
Sheepskin, wool.
Yeah, well,
splitting hairs.
I never thought of that before. No, because I mean, you can get sheep.
Yeah, because wool is processed. Well, I suppose if you're looking at sheepskin.
Like, what's the John Motson kind of coat? Is that not sheepskin? Do you know what I mean? Like the Del Boy. What?
Oh,
camel hair. That's more, isn't it?
Camel hair, mohair, that sort of stuff.
I never did make the connection though. Actually, is sheepskin not just wool?
No, sheepskin rug's got like tanned hide, isn't it? With the fur still attached. With the wool still attached.
I have absolutely no idea. How do you know that?
What, Erin? Sorry, Erin's pointing at me.
Have you pressed that camera?
No, I've not.
Oh,
so
oh.
Ryan's not
well.
Being recorded.
Well, it's fine. Just won't cut to me.
And we'll
yeah, we've got the audio.
We'll blend this into the edit.
Yeah, you've managed it with Tom. I know you kept freezing, so with your mad video skills, I'm sure you'll be fine.
I wonder what people would say now if we made them guess the
right,
ages
yours
again.
Is on now.
Looking how you do now compared to how you did then when they look, because that's what they based it on last time. That picture, which we can now make appear, Erin, can't we?
Mm-hmm.
This picture that you're currently looking at
is not
what it looks like.
You're loving having someone who can just lie through. Yeah, so when we've yeah, just pop this.
Well,
picture
I can just
up.
Make promises that she has to then cash. Should we ask for all sorts? I just have something running across the
To board. Be fair, we said Erin was going to introduce herself and then we just started mocking her. So Erin, please introduce yourself.
I think we have to restart it again. I think you have to say who I am because none of these are recording.
Oh, the audio was recording though.
Yeah, we can still
but
do
we need
it.
Camera.
And you could just be on it. Just on, you can be the
suddenly
shot.
Appear. Why does Erin suddenly appear?
Was that not on either?
No.
Oh.
Oh well.
Okay.
That's the problem.
Well, it's not the problem. We'll figure it out. If you're as good as you say you are...
You should have seen the amount of clips from the last video I had to put together.
This will be all one continuous shot, though.
Well, the audience will be the judge of that, because that'll be coming up, won't it? That work, cutting together the interview, which must have been quite difficult.
Yeah. The amount of times the camera died.
Oh, it charges it, then.
I did charge it.
Not very well.
Right, so we'll start again.
Go on then, introduce her. Introduce the person that already heard arguing.
Right. So we've got somebody new joining us for the podcast today in Lauren 2.0, which is our new marketing executive. Little Welsh producer. Go on, introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Erin.
You made that really awkward for her. I hate when people do that. When someone goes, go on, just introduce yourself, I always just freeze and go, what the heck do I say?
Yeah.
What would you say? Go on, introduce yourself, JP.
Hi, I'm JP. I work for a company called Personnel Checks. Yeah. It's almost like I've had to introduce myself. But it's not like it's a new social dynamic.
Like, talking like it's a natural
yourself.
Conversationalist.
Oh,
I'm just
yeah.
natural, you know, I just naturally do this.
Yeah.
It's not like I haven't spoken
yeah,
to
yeah,
people.
Yeah, I'm just talking all the time.
Everyone's lost, saying how much they love JP's voice. Everyone
I just don't say, I can't stand
He's lost all of his social skills since he had children. He's now not a particularly nice person.
Yeah, I'm an arse.
Unpleasant.
Unpleasant.
I mean, Lauren used to get bullied back when you were well-groomed JP. Now we've got this caveman JP. I don't know what you're in for. He used to really bully Lauren on these podcasts.
I didn't really bully
JP
Lauren.
JP likes me.
Yeah, I like Erin.
We thought he liked Lauren.
Do you know why I like Erin? Because do you know how the people complain in the office that it's cold? I've said for years, like, bring a blanket in. We can't get it right for everyone. Do you know what she's done? She's cold in the office. She's brought a blanket in.
And you realise now there'll be a proportion of the office that hate you for that.
Well, it's just common sense.
There has been some heating wars last couple of weeks.
There has, 28 degrees.
28 degrees is...
Someone turned that's up
should be
degrees.
Illegal. Should be
that,
illegal.
No.
And that's
no higher than... 26 is a lot. I wouldn't go higher than
26?
That. 20 degrees.
20 degrees at home,
yeah.
But I will admit, when it's set at 20 degrees...
22 at the highest, I think.
Yeah, 21 in this office doesn't feel like 21 at home, though. I'll give them that.
It doesn't. So 21 in the office at home is a bit too warm for me.
Far too hot, 21.
Yeah.
But if it's like, you know, like Baltic, then yeah.
But the thing is, with a climate-controlled office, it should never, ever, ever need to change.
Stop this.
Like, they were at it. They were on about it like... Well, in winter, we'll set it to this. I'm like, why? If it's 22 and a half degrees in summer, it's 22 and a half degrees in winter,
yeah.
So it shouldn't ever... They need to put a cage around it with snipers
and lasers. Well, that's what
they've
said
lasers.
Now. Unless everyone's cold, you can't turn up.
No one should... No, we're not even ruling by consensus
I'm
anymore.
Always cold, so I just brought a blanket.
Yeah. Same temperature every day, then you dress for your day. It's like, oh, it's 22 and a half in the office.
So I'm a bit
hot. Cold, so I'm bought
a hoodie. I've worn a T-shirt that's got some ventilation in.
JP has a T-shirt on that has three holes in it.
No, I didn't expect
it does have three holes.
Oh, God,
three
holes.
Holes
have got bigger than I remember them being.
I don't understand how you
two
still
of them
got
are
that.
On the back.
It's like my
that should
know.
Be a decoration.
Sure you don't
it is.
In
I've got two
drawer.
One of them's ruined. The other one's not.
But the funniest ones are the back. There's just two like next to
it
each
is
other.
A cigarette. What it is where it's been folded and someone's put. I don't know how it's ended up with a fag.
Sure you don't have moths. Moths make holes in clothes.
No, they used to be like. A mark where you could clearly tell that it was a cigarette burn.
But you must have had an inkling you were going to take the jumper off, bearing in mind how hot you get from doing the barest of movements. And, by the way, luckily the cameras weren't running when this happened. When he did take his jumper off, he revealed his entire upper body to
us. Rocking the dad bod. You know, it's a vibe. And, you know, I'm owning it.
His arm, like his left arm came fully out the T-shirt.
I nearly just gave up at that point. I was just like, I'm just going to go home.
And everyone was like, oh.
I just swiftly looked away and moved the table at the wrong time.
You not like my body?
Chest hair.
I'd rather you didn't shame me at work.
I have to work with you every day.
I know, it's
a
not
bit
done
too
that.
Much.
You're lucky she's not reporting you, to be honest.
Well, so Tracy.
There's been plenty of times I could have reported a lot of people, but
I don't
didn't.
Say that. Tracy might listen to this.
I think Tracy does listen to this.
I don't know. She'd have probably filed a few reports.
Yeah, you can't be representing the business.
We did used to do this. We did used to test how many people listened by getting them to say something, didn't we, once? What did we get them to say? And then we realised that not many people in the office actually listened to it. Unless we should tell them that we mentioned the name in it.
Tell everyone, made them really paranoid.
Yeah, tell everyone individually. Yeah, you can.
Oh, we talked
podcast.
About you.
Yeah, they would definitely listen then.
They're like, why? Well, you know why.
Just send a massive email, not an email, a Teams message to every single person saying, oh, I spoke about you, just to let you know.
Yeah, just sign this disclaimer just to say that it's allowed
we
to go out.
Just mentioned your name, okay.
Yeah, we heard there was some escapades and we've spoken about everything in the podcast.
We could definitely scare some people. Might increase some listens, though.
Yeah. Well, actually, that's one of the things, Erin, since she's joined us. How long have you been with us now, Erin?
A month.
You've taken over social media for What Time You On Till, which not really done much at the moment, have you?
You didn't have an account. I made the account.
Yeah, to be fair, you did make a call the accounts, but I think that's going to be our Crap Sweets competition this month. Something to do, like and share. If you like and share the new social media pages, you never know. You might get. Maybe we should offer more than one box of Crap Sweets.
Well, do we have anyone that won the last ones?
We do, and it's a previous winner.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it's Fiona. Fiona Orford.
Oh, right.
Yeah, won it again. To be honest, maybe I can't remember what the competition
was. It not to do with baby vomit?
No, it was nappies.
Nappies, that was it, yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember what a guess was, but I remember reading the submission and think, how have you got that?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
Yeah, it was. And I'd just like to clarify as well, last time we did the podcast, I said the children hadn't been sick on me at all. That is no longer the case. Oh, there's been lots.
Is that why you've got holes in your top? Because all those are covered in baby vomit.
Literally, I'll go home, get sicked on, change my top, get sicked on, and then I'm like, I can't just keep going through clothes at this rate. I'm just going to have to...
Have you ever thought of just giving a couple away? Surely
children.
One's enough. Just pick your favourite.
Yeah, I was going to send one to each of
I thought you might give you baby vomit clothes away. I was like...
No, they're important.
Out.
Instead of crap sweets,
you
get a baby.
Yeah, you get a JP
vomit
baby
stained.
Vomit. Yeah,
competition this month, some baby stained.
Yeah, I feel like that's a good idea, though. I think that's a good idea. Get like and What are we on? What are we on? What social media have we got now?
We've got LinkedIn, Twitter, TikTok.
TikTok.
Yeah.
We've got YouTube. We're going to have some.
What do we want them?
Going out on YouTube.
Do we want them to like on like and share something on Twitter? I'll retweet something on Twitter, sorry.
Yeah, well, we're going to be having a lot of video content this time around. We've actually committed to the video, haven't we? We've got an interview that we've recorded, and we're going to be filming this one. So I think liking and sharing the page itself, sharing anything.
Get what page, though?
Yeah, what are the handles?
That's what I mean. We can't get them to... We can't get them to like every... I mean, it'd be nice if they did follow us on everything.
Like everything.
But
now.
I feel like we need to focus on one of them and give them like... If you retweet the tweet that this episode
tweet,
goes out
tweet,
with
yeah.
and
well,
then follow us on
TikTok
Twitter.
TikTok-wise, we're most likely going to post those on LinkedIn and Twitter.
Right. I think if we tweet something and then whoever retweets it and then follows us,
yeah.
one of them will win a box of crap sweets.
Then we can have a link on in the bio on Twitter to the LinkedIn page.
Yeah, that'll do. Are they new crap sweets or are they the same crap sweets? Because they are crap, them crap sweets.
They are the crap sweets.
Well, I had them before Christmas.
They're not them. Oh, rather those crap. No, I think you had the last of the other crap sweets.
Ooh, they were poor. They were poor quality sweets.
These ones are new crap sweets, which they're a little bit more... See, Fiona, as a previous winner, she'll be able to compare the crap sweets and let us know whether or not they're crapper than the previous ones.
That's fair.
Which is, exactly what we want.
So what we got coming up then?
So coming up today, we have some news to go through. As always, we've got an interview with Tom the Taxi Driver, which we'll go into later. Tom is a YouTuber called... Well, his actual name's Tom Huttley, but he goes by Tom the Taxi Driver.
It's a good channel, that, as well. You should follow it.
Yeah, very interesting channel. I was quite surprised that a lot of his followers aren't actually in the industry. They're just people who like his videos. Well, not I'm surprised that people like his videos. I enjoy his videos thoroughly. And then finally, we're going to round things off with Erin is going to be doing Fact or Bullshit with us. You're going to be in total control. And
have
you,
you put them
very
together?
Concerned. No.
So we can't blame you entirely, although we probably will.
Yeah.
I've never done this, my first one. So you can't blame anything on me.
Yes, we can.
Nice. Like, haven't met us. Right, come on. Let's get on with this now. I'm sick of talking to you two. Come on. Let's do the news. Is that what's up first, the news, or are we doing the interview?
Yeah, no, first up the news. We'll go through the news. So I came across a campaign, right? So I was reading Taxi Point. And I feel like the title of this campaign is a little bit edgy. It's the Black Cabs Matter campaign.
I knew you were going to say Black Cabs. I think it's mint, actually. I love that. It's a great idea.
I think it's a great idea. Have you seen what they're opening the campaign with?
No.
The tooting and tooting.
Oh, I see.
So at 8 a.m., this is actually tomorrow, they're starting this, the launch of the campaign. So at 8 a.m. tomorrow, I think it said about 300 cabbies are going to be tooting and tooting. So basically that is a 1 minute toot at the junction of Tooting Broadway Station. This is becoming one of those things where you're saying a word and I'm just...
You are speaking a lot better than you did last time.
Yeah, I'm trying to get the energy up.
You couldn't speak at all last time.
No, I couldn't. So yeah, they're trying to highlight a series of unfair policies and issues that have faced the industry in recent years. And as much as there has been a lot of unfair policies and issues facing them, the organizer have also promised the first 200 people to arrive, they will get a free McDonald's breakfast. So
that isn't it. I mean, I'll go.
Yeah,
I'll go.
If we
that.
Were down in London, I'd be there.
Tooting in Tooting. I bet the people in Tooting are thinking, why did we move to Tooting?
If I lived in Tooting, I'd just like go and get in a cab and be like, we're going for breakfast.
Yeah. Yeah. hash brown on top.
Oh, see, you discovered this recently, didn't you? I mean, I've always been a big advocate of the hash brown on the bacon of the McDonald's breakfast roll.
It has its pros and cons, though, because
you have to bite round the hash brown first, and
the whole experience is shorter.
Yeah,
it's a shorter, more euphoric breakfast experience.
Yeah, it's intense.
Hash brown. Yeah, it's definitely worth it because I get rid of them eggs anyway because they're crap, aren't they? The McDonald's.
I don't mind the eggs.
They're like baked, aren't they? They're not fried eggs. They're not good eggs. There's no runny egg.
No,
there's
no
runny egg
yolk. They are fried. They just pop all the yolks.
Yeah, well, that's stupid.
Which is just scandalous.
Yeah, so I get rid of that. I had an extra layer of sausage, an extra bit of cheese, and then my recent discovery is you slam the hash brown on top.
Well, Erin's a pescatarian, so she does not enjoy.
Does that mean you just eat fish?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Unlike Sammy, who calls herself a vegetarian, but is actually a pescatarian.
Well, no, I think she is now.
Is she actually a vegetarian?
I was vegetarian, but I went back to pescatarian.
Well, she went the other way. She started as a pescatarian and then said,
yeah,
oh.
Yeah, I did.
Well, what she does is she just watches Netflix documentaries and it just changes her life.
like Game Changers. Yeah,
Cowspiracy and stuff like that. And
no, I did that. Everyone gives it 6 months. Being there, done that. Yeah. It's rubbish.
I found Cowspiracy really interesting.
It is interesting, but it didn't want, yeah.
I actually watched it whilst having a double cheeseburger. Genuinely.
It's just one of the simple pleasures.
Not out of any kind of irony. I ordered a burger when I was watching, and then it just happened to come in, and I was like, oh, God, ain't it bad, this beef stuff.
Was it because you were already hungry and you'd ordered it and thought, I'll stick this documentary
on? That's exactly what happened. Yeah, I'd ordered it.
Documentary and you thought, I could just go.
No. It didn't make me want to eat a burger. It just certainly didn't make me want to stop. And what was the other one? Was it Seaspiracy, which is what I think
that's the
one
about the fishing. Such thing as sustainable fishing.
I think that tipped Sammy from pescatarianism.
Are you in the plump for Netflix? Do you just know all the taglines for all these?
I watch a lot on Netflix.
Food-based documentaries,
yeah.
Mm. So why are you a veggie? A pescatarian, sorry.
I went vegan first.
Oh, God.
I was vegan. But I was like 14 or 15, and all my mates were going veggie, so I was like, oh, I'll join in. And I looked into
I'm going to be better than you.
I looked into all of it.
Shows the culture difference, isn't it? All my mates were smoking. All her mates were being veggie. Oh, I smoke. All my mates are smoking. Ooh,
they're all eating grass like the sheep in Wales.
I suppose she's allowed to say that because she's Welsh. Before anyone complains, she is Welsh, so she's allowed to say that.
I am actually Welsh.
To be fair, when we were at the IOL, the Welsh licensing managers were all making jokes about sheep.
Well, there's a road in Stratford where they hold it called Sheep Street, isn't there?
There's a place called Sheep Street in Stratford.
In Stratford, and we have they have the IOL conference. You'll be going probably next time.
Yeah.
And they have the sheep. The streets with all the pubs on is called Sheep Street. And the Welsh lot loved it.
I probably love that, I'm not going to lie.
Anyway, we were talking about some news then, weren't we?
Yeah, so back to the news. So the Black Cabs Matter campaign, so they're doing the tooting and tooting to protest against things like congestion, cycle lanes, Sadiq Khan, 63%.
I did notice that actually, it was congestion, lack of customers, cycle lanes, income down, Sadiq Khan.
I do feel like some of these are nothing, because they're protesting directly against TfL, I think. And yes. Some of these...
Cost of diesel is not
lack of customers generally. I don't think TfL can be held entirely responsible for that. They may have some impetus somewhere, but cost of diesel also not really TfL's. But the fuel problem is something. So I understand why they're upset about the cost of diesel.
Well, the fuel thing's horrible, isn't it? It's affecting everyone now, but it must be particularly bad for like any kind of motor. Relies on motor vehicle for their earnings. It's like, is it something like it's the cost? If inflation's like a 30-year high or something, I read, isn't it?
Yeah, it's something like that.
I mean, I've noticed it from someone who drives relatively little. I used to fill up like since the lockdown stuff, when you don't really leave your house that much anymore. Mm. I put 30 quid in probably once every 2 weeks, and that got me four times backwards and forwards to the office.
Now
oh my God. I put 30 quid in, and by the time I'd driven to the office and home, which is about 20 minutes, 25 minutes each way, I was down to like 180 miles off 30 quid on my range and diesel. And I was
is it?
What is going on with that? What's that?
Erin's broken camera.
Why does that keep going?
You know, we've hired Erin as like a professional.
It's full battery. Why does it keep going off though?
Yeah, she's supposed to be filming my beautiful face.
So I've noticed the pinch on the
after a certain time it stops.
The petrol stuff. So they must have. I mean, people. How many miles will they do a day? They'll probably do more in a day than I do in a month.
A lot. And I mean, I'm paying the cost of diesel, because that's the thing with black cabs as well. They are all diesel engines.
Yeah, that's so expensive.
And I'm paying. I think it's gone down a little bit now. I'm paying £1.76. 176p a litre.
Well, I'm old enough to remember when the prices on the billboards outside petrol stations went over 100p.
Oh, I remember that.
I remember everyone being in uproar about going from 99.9, whatever it was, to 100.
Yeah, it was that in lockdown.
Oh my God.
My earliest memory of petrol prices is about 88p. Yeah.
I'd give anything for it to be 100.
And Americans don't understand how good they've got it. They complain about it, and they pay like $1 a gallon or something stupid like that.
They get people to do it for them. Oh, they don't even get out of their cars.
My mates moved to America.
I think that's really strange.
Yeah.
But you can't get out your car. It's like you can't. What we do, they just don't trust Americans, quite rightly. Right, because what we do is we fill up, then we go in, then we pay for what
they do it the opposite way around.
You
pay for the fuel
then
first.
Some guy comes out and... I mean, to be fair, if you make me pay beforehand, I'd be like, well, go on, then you fill it up. I'm not bothering with it.
Well, yeah.
But apparently you can't do it any other way. You can't, like, just fill it up yourself. It's, someone has to come out and do it for you.
Petrol, I'm sure they just bath in petrol. They've just got petrol coming out of everywhere in America. They make their own.
One thing it might do this, though.
It's just vegetable oil.
It might drive...
It's just vegetable oil. Billions of years compacted vegetable oil.
It might drive a lot of cabbies towards electric vehicles. Because we talk about that with Tom in the interview coming up, don't we? The pre-recorded interview, he mentioned it because he's got an electric cab and he talks about it.
Mm.
And they are expensive to buy, by the sounds of how much you still got to pay off on that. But this might tilt a few people over to it on the basis that it's going to cost so much more to run a diesel
potentially,
cab
yeah.
at the minute.
I did see some... I was reading an article in the Daily Record about the fuel prices going up, and you'll appreciate this. The quote was, "Instead of buying petrol, why not save money by developing a cocaine habit and running everywhere?"
Well, I think in reading this article, that anyway, about the black cabs matter, it does. There is an expectation, I think, that the fuel crisis has now peaked. And I think quoting it from John Minshall, a cabbie from Stoke-on-Trent, in this article, is quoted as saying, ultimately, fuel hopefully has now peaked and should drift back down, should be where we were pre-Christmas in a couple of months. So the expectation, I think, is that it's temporary. I certainly hope so.
Yeah.
It's, I think everybody
soul destroying watching like how little you get for 30 quid now. I wonder how much it cost to fill up my whole tank. No, it used to be about 60 quid. I think I'd be pushing 100.
I'd get my half a tank for about 25 quid.
And what have you got?
I've got a Vauxhall Corsa.
Of course you have.
What colour? It's the new one,
little
not the
cobalt
big one.
Blue one.
Not the little one like that.
I used to.
The newest one.
Don't diss that. That was my first car.
My first car.
A 2003 Vauxhall Corsa grey.
Not that type. Not. That's a chav car. Like.
I know. It's all you could afford.
Just walk around the track.
I had a little white Toyota.
My insurance, I did not. That is fake news. I used to have Rockports though. The insurance on that was obscene.
Yeah,
it was like
I can imagine.
1,600 quid a year.
Because they know that you're going to crash it.
No, it was a 1 litre
for boys though. It's more money.
It's scandalous.
Money,
yeah. It was that was the skintest I've ever been paying for that car.
I had a Toyota.
It's not been long since I bought my first car. My Renault Grand Scenic, 1.5 litre.
He does everything. I could not wait to start driving. Wait to start driving my car. He was happy to be a bus.
You passed first time.
Yeah,
of course I did.
Cost me about 75 quid.
You passed
first
time. Yeah. How many minors?
One.
Oh, bollocks.
Yeah.
That's not. I don't think that's true. Nobody gets one. I got four, and I always thought that was buzzing.
I passed second time with like three minors.
It doesn't matter how many minors you got if you pass second time.
Yeah.
What did you fail on first time?
I can't even remember.
That means it's something bad.
Oh no! This really wound me up. Actually,
in
Skipton, where I did my test,
Your test in Skipton?
Because it's easier than passing in Blackburn. Because Blackburn's got one of the lowest rates in the country, pass rates.
Oh, so you went for an easy one and still failed? Okay.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
But what it was, they were building a new roundabout on the outskirts of Skipton, and I was driving down the road. And normally, if you're going straight on a roundabout, you go in the left-hand lane, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's specifically marked, yes, mm-hmm. which is what I failed on.
Oh, well, that's
but
your
the thing is,
fault, isn't it?
You can't go... The road to go left hadn't been built.
Was it signposted?
It was signposted.
Well, there were
no signs, but it was on the pavement. It was on the road.
Well,
there were no signs.
You were yes. rightly failed.
Yeah.
That's why... This is exactly why some idiot pulled out in front of me and I ended up crashing during the week, because they were in the wrong lane, even though it says it's a left lane only here. They were in the wrong lane, they pulled straight in front of me, I stopped, bang, someone hit back of me, and then they toddled off into the distance and got home and had the tea. I bet you went, oh, well, what happened? Did something just happen? Oh, never mind. While I'm there talking to a van man about his bumper hanging off.
What van? You said it was a new van, what was it?
What make?
Mm.
Like a Fiat something. Mm. It was bad as well, because it had like... There was more damage on his than mine. My back bumper
just bounced
away a little bit.
Yeah,
there's a bit of scratching on the back. His like number plate came off. It's pushed his whole bonnet back and out, so there's like gaps at the side. It's pushed the side panels back, so every time he opens the door, it goes coo, coo. Every time he opens it, I felt really sorry for him. He was a really nice guy as well, and he was like, "It's not my fault. This is how it isn't, but it is."
Oh,
or by the law,
God.
It is. Because technically, what they'd say is you should have left enough room for an emergency stop, but. You want like when you're going onto a motorway slip road as well, you are instantly going to speed up.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
So I wish I had a dash cam. I'd have submitted it to one of those Facebook pages.
Yeah.
You know, they all argue.
Well, you'd have been able to send it to the police, and they would.
But
have...
I still don't know whether it would be their fault though, because it would still they would still say you should leave enough room for a car to emergency stop in front of you.
Was there space in front of you?
Well, no, because he pulled straight out. But I didn't.
Well, it's their fault. Then,
yeah, but the person behind should still be expecting me to make or have enough room for me to make an emergency stop, is what the law says.
But even the person behind you should have done that too.
So I stopped in time. But he didn't stop.
Just a bit of a mess.
Yeah. To be honest, I saw him coming as well. Otherwise, I would have hit him. I thought, I bet they're going to come over in a minute. So I was sort of ready for slamming on. Whereas obviously he was coming round and not seeing what I was seeing.
Yeah,
there was nothing he could have done. The fella, he could have been the best driver in the world, and he'd have still. And to be fair, he did well to slow down as much as he did. Like,
this
yeah,
is nice though. Could have been horrible, and
yeah, could have been worse. But the person was just got home scot free, and it winds me up.
Yeah,
they just toddled off up the motorway while I'm there. Going up the inside lane really slowly because there was no hard shoulder on the A56 either. So I didn't want to stop on the lane because I hate when people do that. I'm like, why don't you just come off at the next junction? Unless your car's like ripped apart, get off the bypass and like let us all get home, is what I say.
Well, I think you get in trouble for that, don't you?
Well, I don't really know what the rules are now. I don't know. But yeah, anyway.
Anyway.
What were we saying? This happens all the
time. Fuel prices. I've forgotten. Oh, well, the fuel price thing is actually leading to fare price increases across the country.
Well, it's always going to, isn't it? Because they have to make money.
Well, that's the thing. Historically, licensing authorities have been a bit resistant to putting prices up, even though they've called for it in the past, particularly during the pandemic when there was less customers.
Yeah, so Hackney fares they'll have to set, won't they? So the council will have to increase fares. Uber can set whatever prices they want to, and they're having to increase it anyway, aren't they? Oh, any private hire, sorry, not just Uber. Now, I did read that they're upping their prices now for the VAT, aren't they, as well?
Yes, 20% they're going up because of the ruling from the High Court.
Well, anyway, they're having to up it now.
Yeah, it's because before they were classed as self-employed drivers, isn't it? Whereas now they've got to take the VAT into consideration.
But it's always going to come back to us, and it probably should. Yeah, they've got to make money, aren't they, these people? But are the Hackney fares going up, though, now?
I'm not sure, but I know Uber have been very keen because they've made the change to their model and they're going to have to put up their prices. They've been very keen to push because the High Court's only ruled in London. So all the operators in London are going to have to add this 20% on. But now Uber have filed...
Well, a lot of operators in London already treat them as employees, though, don't they?
Yeah. I don't think it's the employee. I think it's something slightly different. I can't quite remember what it is.
Yeah, but they'll now be subject to income tax and all this other stuff weren't subject to before.
But it was just in London, but Uber have now filed to a court to ask them to clarify whether the High Court decision applies to every operator in the UK, which...
They're always torching the court. There'll always be a court case going on.
They love it.
The prices are already going up, actually. My sister's fella flew over for a wedding we were at last weekend, and he arrived in Manchester really, really late, so my mum and dad couldn't pick him up like they planned. And he didn't... He priced up an Uber to get from Manchester to Stoke, which is about an hour and a bit.
Yeah.
And he said it was cheaper to just go to the desk in the airport and book a taxi through there.
Wow.
Now, it would never have been cheaper to do that 2-3 years ago. So it looks like the price increase is starting.
Mm.
To be fair, I never really had that much experience of Uber being cheap.
I did. Do you use Uber?
Yeah, a lot in Manchester.
I would always get it home from Manchester in an Uber, typically, because it was cheaper than a black cab. Now there's not that much in it, if anything. And it depends what size car you get. If you get a normal saloon car, this is what Tom...
You can get green cars as well now, which are a bit more expensive, which are more... must be electric cars.
Yeah. And when I'm hammered and I want to go home, quite frankly, I don't give a shit about the advice.
It's not about that.
I'd go for an Uber if I was on my way home from a night out. Because it's on my phone, it's so accessible.
It used to be cheaper.
I've never hailed down a cab in Manchester.
Well, I always used to find you had to enter negotiations with a cabbie. Like, how many drops? Yeah. And then you'd be like, and they go, how much? And then you'd end up arguing. Uber is like, this is what the price is, take it or leave it. And it used to be cheaper, but it's not anymore. So
Or you'd have to like pre-book a cab at certain times.
And half the time, they don't bloody turn up anyway.
They're never there on time, and sometimes you forget, and you're like, oh, shit.
You don't know where you've got to go. Yeah.
And then you never know where the parts are.
You're always anticipating it, aren't you? Mm. You know? Yeah.
Can't relax.
Mm.
But final bit of news before we move on to the interview. It's just an honorary mention because we kept bringing it up and it's come back. But it's about the Plymouth livery changes, the green and white. They're looking very snazzy on the new cabs.
Well, see, I got in trouble last time because I said I liked them and then everybody in Plymouth hated the idea. So I was like...
Well, this is what the council have backed down, essentially. Well, they've not backed down.
Lovely.
Councils have determined that the changes are going to be rolled out over the next 5 years to give drivers a chance to recover from the pandemic, which I think is a perfectly reasonable decision to make, because they wanted to bring it in quite quickly, which I think this is more than what they needed, but more than fair.
Yeah, I mean, they do look very pretty.
They do look very pretty.
We'll let them off with that. I think this leads on nicely to something that I was going to mention as well, is the new... DFT, what are they calling it?
The new best practice consultation.
Best practice guidance consultation, yeah. And there's obviously a number of topics that they're releasing to consultation to the trade at the minute.
Yeah,
I was actually called by Des Broster, who was a guest on the podcast a few months ago.
Regional Director of VSU.
Of VSU, yeah, and he mentioned it. And basically, one of the things that he picked up on, which I think is an interesting part of this, and could be quite controversial, is a section on Section 8 of the Vehicle Licensing, Identification and Signage. And the gist of it is that they want to make Hackney carriages more identifiable from private hires through their signage. Now, technically, at the minute, the Hackney carriages are the ones that you weigh about.
Mm-hmm.
Private hires are the ones that you book.
Right.
And anything that has taxi roof sign is a Hackney. Private hires can't have taxi roof signs.
Yeah.
Now, the risk... I mean, what my view on this is... Because how they've worded it is that there are a number of factors to consider in relation to vehicle signage and identification, safety, competition, commercial arguments, and the fact that there are a wide variety of approaches by licensing authorities, so like livery, for example, being one. The government's view is that safety should be the prime consideration, which I agree with as well. So the risk, I mean, I agree with the idea that private hires and hackneys should be distinguishable.
And there's no
disagreement from me in making them more distinguishable than they currently are. Because you get it quite a lot, don't you, where you sometimes go up to a car and go, can I just jump in? And they go, no, you need to book.
Yeah.
So making that clear, fine. What it can't be at the expense of, though, is private hires being identifiable in their own right. Because what that opens up to is people, predators, posing as private hire cars because there's so little signage on them.
Right.
So I think that was sort of the and I'm sure Des will correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think that was the vibe that Des was coming from. Is there a public safety risk here?
Because it should be about making one more identifiable, not necessarily making the other one less. So.
Exactly. But that's what you can't do.
It's like with private hires, they only have a small sign on the door, don't they? They don't have the taxi thing.
Well, they can't have the taxi thing. They can't have the roof sign. They've obviously got to have the plate on the back. But, I mean, I don't see why you can't... I mean, what Manchester do is every operator, every private hire vehicle that works for an operator has to have their yellow sign.
Yeah,
you notice every private hire has a yellow sign. It'll say Uber, it'll say Streetcars, it'll say Betty's Taxis or whoever it is.
Yeah.
But that's just a Manchester rule.
Right.
So some don't have any rules around livery from private hire.
The sort of thing that should be the national minimum standards, something like that.
I think there should be a sign on it. I mean, it could be that you have different roof signs. One says taxi, one says PHV or something like that. One's red, one's yellow. I don't know. But what it can't be at is making private hire vehicles less identifiable.
That's the same in like places like New York, isn't it? You know, they have the yellow taxi cabs and then Ubers have the Uber sign. Mm. It's as easy as that.
Yeah, when you go to Dusseldorf, I go to Dusseldorf quite a lot, the taxis there are brilliant because they're all exactly the same colour.
Mm-hmm.
They're all pretty much the same car.
Mm.
They're not a very nice colour, actually, like a beige colour, which is probably so nobody gets it.
Mm.
And they all have the sign on the top. Mm-hmm. It's green if it's free, and it's red if it's not. So you see them, and you go, oh, it's a taxi there. Oh, it's red. So you ignore it. No confusion. Is that a taxi? Is it not a taxi?
Exactly.
So I think if you make something like that, which I think is probably what Plymouth are going for,
yeah, because I mean, that's exactly what they said in one of the early things.
Because there's no problem with Ubers because you order it yourself, whereas taxis, there is that complication.
And it would make it easy to see if a private hire was applying for hire illegally because you'd be able to identify that's a private hire car, not a Hackney.
Yeah.
So I think that's the better way of doing it. Don't want to film you that, JP.
No, I'm not surprised. It's probably breaking it.
But what they talk about as well here is they say requirement to display operator details means at best that the drivers would need to carry multiple sets of magnetic signs and at worst replace adhesive stickers multiple times if they work for multiple operators.
You have to redo that bit.
Which is true.
I just missed that.
This is a production masterclass. But this has gone out to consultation, so it'd be interesting to see what the trade think about it. I suspect Hackneys probably won't mind because all that's going to happen is that they become more identifiable as a Hackney.
Yeah, it makes no difference.
Operators will probably not like it. Well, Des certainly didn't. And I'd be interested to see what licensing authorities think about it as well, because they're the ones that ultimately have to enforce when things aren't going well. And is it going to make their life as enforcement officers harder if they can't tell what cars are bloody private hire vehicles or just people in?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, so I'd be interested to see what they say. There's a number of things that are out, like there's age limit consultations as well, a requirement for a vehicle to be 3 years old or less at first license. Again, that's quite
controversial.
It's quite young, that, a three-year-old car.
Three-year-old car.
And again, you're adding more expense.
Because I'm not being funny, it's one of those things. I mean, you can earn good money as a taxi driver, but new cars these days, if you want something that fits all the requirements of a taxi, you're looking at paying at least 15 grand.
Well, for the electric ones, the more. But for anything that's under 3 years old, for a car that's going to meet the licensing authority's standards of size, of, you know, spec, you can't just get yourself a bloody Ford KA or something and expect to be a taxi in it. So you are just spiralling the prices up. And there's a number of things that they actually the question in the licensing side of it as well. So driver proficiency, do they agree? One of the questions is, do you agree that licensing authorities should require taxi and private hire vehicle drivers as professional drivers to evidence a higher degree of driving ability than private motorists? That's one example. As professional drivers, should you vocational training and assessments, do you agree that licensing authorities should not require drivers to obtain vocational qualifications? Topographical knowledge tests, again, that's a question that's been circulating for a while.
We've spoken about that before. I think knowledge tests are needed to a degree.
We mentioned this in the interview with Tom, that we'll come after this, so we won't encroach on that too much, but the argument is with topographical tests in particular, which is the how do you get from A to B stuff, is with sat navs nowadays, are they necessary? And you know, I can see the argument for no. I mean, I personally think if you should have a decent knowledge. I mean, for example, if you're driving somewhere and the traffic's busy, you know, you don't just want a driver that's following a sat nav. Can you know? Can you find another way around?
Yeah, I can follow a sat nav.
At the same time, though, I think more people would want to be a cabbie if they just had a sat nav.
If there was less to do,
you get more cabbies, but would the quality then be diluted?
Because
they don't want to. I mean, and there's more to knowledge tests than just the topographical side of things as well. Like, I think there should be a standard of safeguarding, like a taxi policy. Do they know what they can and can't do? You know, sometimes English language tests are required by licensing authorities, because I mean, I've had instances in the past where I've got in a taxi and the guy can't speak English,
understand.
And it becomes very difficult to actually get yourself anywhere. I've had one guy try to head in completely the wrong direction, thinking I'd set a different town to where I was, and I was like, where are you going? And so I get that there is a need probably for some level of assessment. It's just whether the A to B, the how do you get from this place to that place in that area, is something that should be necessary on all of them. Certainly, I think it should be on Hackneys. I think if you're going to be able to pick people up that are waving at you from the pavement, you need to be able to know where you're going. So there's a number of questions on this, and I'd be interested to see if anyone wants to, you know, tweet us or send us an email. We'll happily read out some of the comments on this in the next episode, but I'd like to just get a vibe from the industry about what they think about this consultation, because they are asking a lot of questions about a lot of things.
It's been asked for a lot of years. Last best practice guidance, what was that, 2010? So 12 years.
Well, this is just a consultation on some of the guidance stuff, so it's not necessarily setting anything in stone yet.
But it's
going through all sorts. Taxi rank provisions, bylaws for Hackney carriages, staying safe, guidance for taxi drivers, all sorts of stuff. And it's just basically asking for taxi drivers to comment. So I think it's, you know, if you're a taxi and private hire driver or an operator, and you're listening to this, then, you know, you can respond. The consultation began on the 28th of March and runs until the 20th of June. So you've got plenty of time to put together some consultations. I'm sure there'll be, the big operators will be putting the responses together. Licensing authorities certainly will. If you want to, there's online surveys and response forms that you can download as well from the Gov website. So we'll share that, as I assume, as part of this episode. But yeah, if anyone wants to email in or tweet us, we'll happily read anything out.
Yeah, so tweet us out our new Twitter handle, which is what, Erin? See, testing
you.
It's on my phone. It's on your phone. See, you're our social media executive.
I'm sure it'll come up though. What's hanging on?
Trying to find it.
Yeah.
Let's Google it. We do know our Twitter handle, we promise.
Stop sighing, man. God, you're milking this kid thing now, this triplet thing, aren't you? It's not that. It can't be that hard. Surely two of them are asleep most of the time.
Oh, we've got like the best Twitter handle ever. Have you not found it yet? Have you not found our Twitter?
What is it?
At Taxi Podcast.
It's not that, is it?
What time are you on till? At Taxi Podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it is. So, tweet us to at Taxi Podcast.
You thought of that.
Did I?
Yeah, you did. So you can't say
I
anything.
Came up with the handle. And
no, we've only got two followers at the minute. One of them is Rachel Bishop, who was the guest last time, and the other is us.
I don't even...
So we want to expand that
by
next time.
Give us a follow.
So give us a follow and tweet us what you think on any of the things that we've discussed.
Yeah, but we'll actually have some decent content on there as well. We'll get some videos on, and I promise it won't just be me being grumpy. Although a lot of it will just be me being grumpy.
And can we ask you to commit to having a haircut for the next episode?
Yeah,
I know.
I do.
If we get how many followers, then JP can
this is a good idea. Then let's
so there's an opportunity to win some crap sweets, but if we get 3,000 followers by the next episode.
3,000?
By the next
you
episode.
We can't be waiting 3,000 for your next episode.
No.
We've got
3,000
regular listeners.
I was thinking 15.
15 followers.
15 followers. No, I was going to do something. I will have a haircut anyway.
Well, why don't we do something a bit mad then? If we get to 100 followers,
yeah.
Will you dye your hair? What time you want so yellow?
No, because we have 3,500 regular listeners.
Why don't you shave your head then?
If we get 3,000 followers,
you'll shave your head
in the next month. I will shave.
No, hang on, that's ridiculous. Is that doable?
Right. Is that how many do we have on? We have 3,000 followers listening.
Yeah, so they're not all going to follow.
It needs to be less than that.
Well, it depends how much they want to see him looking like an egg.
Oh, exactly. It's a challenge for Aaron, really. Get some content out of me.
No, it's got to be less than that. What about 1,500? 1,500?
Yeah, I feel like 1,500's...
But it can't just be in the next month. When we get to the 1,500
mark... No, I'm not just going to... Because that'll...
No, that's what I mean. Let me finish. Don't rush me. If you have 1,500 in a month, you shave your head. If we don't hit the month, as soon as we get to 1,500, you've got to do something else, a bit less aggressive than that, because we still want them to follow after.
Yeah,
No one can do something else next month.
Maybe you should do one.
Or
you should dye your
beard.
I'm not dyeing my beard.
Why? Look at this. You clearly do not care about your appearance at the minute, so why are you so bothered about this?
I like my beard.
Wear a t-shirt with no holes in it.
The source of all my masculinity.
Ridiculous suggestion, Aaron. I think you should dye it like teal.
You can do one for 1,500 and then you can do something for the...
I actually care about my beard.
Which is why it's funnier.
You don't have to do anything to your hair. You can do anything.
Look at him. He looks like we've found him under a bridge. He's got like ridiculous hair. He's got holes in his clothes. What happened to
shall
the man?
Should we give JP a makeover for one of the videos?
That's what we do. We could pay for a professional to come in and do like... I tell you what we could do. We could do his eyebrows. We could thread his eyebrows.
Yes, right.
Oh, so you look like Joey Tribbiani or Friends when he gets his eyebrows done.
Fit.
Yeah, we'll give you a makeover.
Yeah, 1,500 then. Get us 1,500 followers and JP will have horrendous things done to him. And that's at Taxi Podcast is what you need to follow, so... Make sure you do, and we want to see what JP comes out like.
Right, so then moving on from the horrendous things that will potentially be done to me.
Still look better than you do now.
You're horrible to me. We've got an interview this week, which was done remotely. We've alluded to this a couple of times already. So our interview this was with... Let me start that again. Our interview this week is with the one and only Tom Hutley, who is cab driver and...
The one and only Tom... Come on, you can't do that.
What?
That's ridiculous. You can't say the one and only Tom Hutley.
I could say it like that if
just
you want.
Just call him Tom... Just Tom the taxi driver.
The one and only Tom the taxi driver.
He's not the one and only Tom the taxi driver.
Aaron says that himself.
There will be another Tom who is a taxi driver.
No, but... Like the one that does the social media. And
but he just
YouTube.
Sounded like a gimp then when he did that.
YouTube star. Tom the taxi driver.
I was actually going to say YouTuber extraordinaire.
That's fine,
yeah,
do that.
That's
but
fine,
not the
that...
one and only.
But, you're horrible. I do nothing. I come into work.
We couldn't have used that. The one and only.
Not like his Beyonce.
I think the tables have turned now. JP's not the one bullying.
Talking
us.
Like it's Frank happens. Sinatra. The one and only.
This is the other way around.
The one and only.
You're my one and only.
No.
We did mention him actually, didn't we, Tom the Saturday Drive, on a previous podcast. We mentioned one of his videos, didn't we? The Uber one. Where he did the comparison.
So Tom Hutley, not the one and only. I'm not allowed to call him the one and only. Tom, I'm sorry. is a YouTuber and cabbie who runs a channel called Tom the Taxi Driver. Imaginative name, as he admits himself. so he creates
He's even been mean to guests now.
He said it himself.
So people can take the mick out themselves.
Well, I
mean, you can pile on.
That's what I'm doing.
It's a very straight to the point name. I like
it. Can I finish my introduction now?
What do you mean?
What are you squeaking?
God, have you written this? Have you planned this?
I have written. That's because I didn't expect to have four or five interruptions.
Well, the first
throughout.
One, you started doing Morse code half the way through it. Then you went, the one and only.
The one and only Tom Huntley, cab driver and YouTuber
right,
extraordinaire.
Introduce it properly.
Right, so I'm going to be very surreal.
I'm going to walk out in a minute.
Right, so we've interviewed a guy called Tom. He's a taxi driver. Right.
Oh dear.
Right.
Oh dear, exactly, Erin.
Honest to goodness.
You're going to have to edit
Get
this.
Get a grip.
Oh, wow.
Pull yourself together, JP.
Right, so we've interviewed Tom the taxi driver this week. Cab driver and YouTuber. He runs a channel where he does a lot of video content, which is always really informative and a joy to watch. Any comments on that, Ryan?
No, that was fine. Nothing ridiculous in that one.
We actually interviewed Tom last week, but with the power of editing, Erin, our producer, is going to just seamlessly drop us into the interview now, and it will be like nothing has changed, but suddenly Tom will join us. We have Tom, the taxi driver, joining us, Tom Huntley, who is a cabbie in London, who has a very successful YouTube channel. Me and Ryan are both very excited for this. We've been looking forward to this, haven't we? He's not been stopped talking about it all day. To me, so I'm looking forward to this. I think it's just because he gets some time off his actual work, to be honest.
No, I've been looking through Tom's YouTube channel again, and I've liked a lot of videos that I want to talk about and ask him about, so I'm quite excited.
Yeah,
so,
talk into the mic, moron.
God, you really are narky, aren't you?
It's been a long few days. So how are you, Tom? You're right.
Ah, loving life, guys. Thank you very much for having me on. This is great.
Oh, no.
No problem.
Pleasure. So obviously, we discovered you on YouTube, and I've watched a lot of your videos to inform some of the articles I write. So just give yourself a chance to introduce yourself to our listeners.
Yeah, most certainly. So, of course, I'm Tom the Taxi Driver. Nice original name there, but of course the alliteration works pretty well.
Yeah.
I've been driving as a London cabbie since December 2017, so just over 4 years. It took me about 3 years to get through the knowledge. And I started my YouTube channel in 2020. You know, like many people, lockdown, you're like, geez, what the hell do I do with my life? I'd wanted to do it for quite some time, but it always put on the back burner. You're like, oh, I'm so busy for that, I can't do that. So when 2020 came around, it was like, right, I've got no excuses. Let's get this thing off the ground. No. And yeah, I've had a bit of an adventure along the way, a few mishaps and things like that. But, you know, it's sort of semi-constant-ish now and takes up a lot of my time, really. That taxi driving, it's just the endless cycle, really.
Well, that's good going, that. So in 2 years, you've got 50,000 subscribers. So that's 25,000 a year.
So yeah, well... Well, I don't know. I try not to pay too much attention to subscribers because it's just like, as anyone on sort of some of these social platforms would tell you, it's more about like audience engagement, really. You know, you could have 50,000 subscribers, but they could all be people who hate your guts or whatever, or not interested in what you actually want to be doing. So, you know, I'd much rather have like 10,000 people that, or, you know, even less or whatever that are, you know, a core sort of group that really enjoy what you want to do. Maybe they're supportive and say, oh, Tom, maybe you should do this idea or go for that idea. And that's kind of what helps inform me, you know, make, you know, different content, really.
Well, that's the thing. I suppose if you're putting the time into the content and you're making content that's relevant, the subscribers will just come.
Yeah. And also trying to be like, you know, not take for granted any one particular bit of content. I think everyone like who watches stuff thinks they know what they want, but it's like the old Henry Ford quote of like, you know, you can, wasn't it Henry Ford? One of these sort of things where people think they know what they want. Oh, Henry Ford. Yeah. If I asked my customers what they wanted, they would have just asked for a faster horse. You know, obviously he then went on to make the Model T.
Customers don't know what
and,
they want.
So I try and do that with my content, really. You know, there's certain stuff that works, but I know that, you know, like any good TV show or whatever, it's not going to work forever. So you've got to kind of keep innovating and keep thinking of these new ideas. And that's kind of what racks my brain a lot of the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I've enjoyed watching the video. I know a lot of the recent ones have been focused around the knowledge. So like you said, you've only been a taxi driver for just over 4 years now. And a lot of people say that, well, I've read reports of people taking 10 plus years to do the London knowledge. Obviously it's the most comprehensive test in the taxi world, probably one of the most comprehensive tests out there. How long did it take you to do it?
So I did it in just under 3 years, but I was quite sad. You know, I was living at home with my parents. I split up with my girlfriend. And other than just working full time, I just dedicated all my time to that, basically. So if I wasn't at work, I was in London or in front of a map, basically. So,
find it's always good motivation, a breakup.
Yeah, literally. You're like, God, like, if I've broken up with my girlfriend and I still can't achieve this, I'm a loser. But I'm living at home with my parents. I've not got a lot going for me. I've got to get this done.
So being a cabbie, is that sort of like your revenge career? Like people have like revenge bodies, it's your revenge career.
Yeah, I mean, it was like an ultimatum. I mean, she was going to Australia. It's like, yeah, I'm going to Australia. She didn't really invite me either. And I was like... So I'm like, I had to sort of think about this. I'm like, I could have gone, but then I would have come back to the UK and like not had a career, I was just working in retail at the time. I'd been to uni. I'd kind of just was a bit lost. And I'm like, where does my life really go here? I could just escape to Australia, but then if I come back, I've got nothing to come back to. So, right, if I knuckle down hard for 3 years, I've got a career that effectively could be for life. So that was my inspiration, really, and I'm so glad to have gone through that.
So how are you finding it at the moment? Obviously, there's a lot of negativity on social media at the moment. Oh, the trade's dead. There's no point getting into it. But we're clearing the pandemic now. Things are getting back to normal. Yep. I know things are a lot more back to normal for us. Are you finding that business is returning?
Yeah, business has definitely returned, but it's not quite as consistent as what it once was before the pandemic, I found. Like, there was almost like seasonality to it, or I was just getting to grips with this said seasonality. And older drivers will tell you, you know, school holidays, quiet, you know, certain events that go on in London will generally be busier around that kind of time. But since the pandemic, like, you can go one day and it's like, well, where did everyone go? And then the next day, it's just so chaotic. There is just nowhere near enough cabs on the street. So I think it's kind of very synonymous of how life is at the moment with, you know, things like energy rates going up. We are kind of in a bit of a unknown, kind of very sporadic world.
Yeah.
And I think that the taxi trade represents that. And I've kind of always sort of thought that, actually, when you look back through history and what's affected taxi trades in the past, we're just generally related to the economy. We're an accessory to the economy. Economy does well, taxis do well. Economy does bad, taxis do bad. And, you know, that can be seen by what's going on across the world, why it is kind of a bit sporadic at the moment, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it is one of those things. It feeds into everything, doesn't it? I mean, hospitality feeds into... taxis, like you say, everything in the economy feeds into taxis. So it's no surprise that it has been slow, but it looks like things are bouncing back. So what would you say to those people? Because there's a lot of, in it, not to generalise, but I'm going to generalise. It tends to be a lot of the older drivers who've been in it a long time, and this has been a big shock to the system, and they're saying there's no point doing the knowledge anymore. The game's dead. How would you respond to people, or how do you respond to people when you're having those conversations?
There's a lot of different ways of looking at it, and I would never sort of force it upon anyone and say, oh yeah, you got to do it, it's the greatest thing in the world, like it will change your life, it's the silver bullet and it's amazing. And when you're on the knowledge, because it's this so far-flung goal, you think, well, it's so, so hard, it must be worth it at the other end. And for me, I can say categorically, from before, you know, doing my knowledge and obviously now coming out with a badge, I have a richer quality of life. I have a much better quality of life. I have freedom, you know, able to do fun things like this. I earn more money. I've done certain opportunities I definitely would not have been able to do on my circumstances beforehand. But that's just me. Other people that have come from maybe from a self-employed background, maybe labouring backgrounds, they might look at the two and go, well, hold on a minute. Maybe I was earning more money as a labourer or whatever. And you can't always make that comparison because it is an entirely different job. You know, if you've been working on building sites, obviously that's an incredibly laborious job, whereas sitting in a taxi is almost quite the opposite, really. It's quite relaxing in some ways, although you could argue with sort of London traffic. My main thing and what I'm trying to get across in the YouTube is some of the realities of the job. Like, one of my most recent ones I put up was quite a controversial title, and I used the title that a lot of cabbies have said for years of like, oh, is the game dead? And
I've seen that.
Yeah,
one.
I saw that one. Yeah.
Some people kind of misinterpreted it as me saying like, "Oh, I'm like so anti, like I want to get out of the cab trade and that." And no, it's kind of just looking at all the things that are happening in the world right now, the vehicles that we have to have, the increased cost of living and stuff, and that these might affect how good the job might have once been. You know, it's no surprise that in years gone by that the job might have been better. But I think if you look at every sector of society, everyone will always say, oh, it was so much better back in the day, always so much better. Everything has been carved up and cut up, and there is more barriers to entry, I think. Like, when I was in retail, for instance, you know, my old boss said, oh, in the 70s, if you had a shop, it was like a license to print money. You would just put a product on the shelf, people would come in and just take it. It wouldn't matter what it was, it would just sell. Whereas now, it'd be like, oh, retail's dead, retail's dying, it's all about online. But go down your local high street, or go down, you know, Regent Street, Oxford Street, there's still major retailers there, it's still there, but the game has evolved ever slightly. And I think it's the same with taxis. Taxis aren't ever going to be dead, people are always going to get around, it just means that how we operate will change.
I think that's the thing, and we've spoken about it a few times on the podcast, haven't we? The taxi trade itself has been a little bit lagging behind the rest of the economy in terms of evolving with the times, like contactless payments and, well, card payments as a whole, they're only just really pushing for that now, that it has to be done. And in a place like London, where a lot of people don't carry cash, it seems strange that it's taken so long to get there.
Yeah, one of the reasons, in fact, the video that I stumbled upon, Tom, that I found your channel was when we were talking about this sort of Uber impact on the license trade at large, and your video of comparisons to the, where you sort of keyed the journey into the Uber app and then you did it yourself on your meter, and you actually, I think, not to steal your thunder too much, but I think the point of the video was that, you know, it can be cheaper on Uber if you have a four-seater car in a non-surge price time when it's not raining and it's nice and sunny. But if you have anything larger and it's peeing it down, the likelihood is it's probably going to be just as at the same cost or even more expensive than if you've gone and jumped in a black cab. And I found that really interesting, and we mentioned it on one of the episodes, because to be completely honest with you, I wasn't expecting that to be the result, because, you know, everyone sort of assumes that Uber's cheaper. But I've been interested to get your take on the impact that Uber's had on the, particularly the Hackney trade, because it's been a very controversial introduction into the market. They're by no means perfect, particularly when you can look at some of the corporate issues that they've got. But I'd just be interested from your perspective how it's the introduction of Uber has really changed your working life, really, in that regard.
Yeah, so to preface it, I've only known of Uber in my time that I've been working as a cab driver. So I can't, personally, I can't draw comparisons from before and afterwards. You know, I can only take anecdotal stuff from other drivers and things like that. The way I've understood it and the way that I've heard other drivers explain it was that when it first came out on the scene, like when Uber first came up and people downloaded the app and had it on their phone, I think it was this new a novel thing, like an Amazon, where it's like, look, I can press this button and someone's going to turn up, no questions asked, and they'll take me wherever I want to go, and it's going to cost me a fiver, it's going to be amazing. And I think it was because, you know, it's heavily investor backed, as you guys know, so they could subsidize the rides, it gets everyone on board, they collect all the data, and they can grow and expand in that way. But, you know, fast forward to now, I think what they've been operating in London or so for about 8 or so, 9 or so years, and it's not the model that it once was. You know, they've had to put prices up. They're surging more often than not. And that's kind of what I wanted to show in my video. I always got so annoyed when people were like, oh, you know, always, you know, black cabs are always more expensive. And the problem is that I think people, no matter what Uber will charge someone, right? If you've got the blinders on, if you're always using this Uber app, you'll go, well, that's expensive, but a black cab is always more expensive. I think people always have this kind of thing in their head when it's really not. And very often I get people come in and they go, cool, is that all it was? I'm like, yeah, that's it. You know, we're metered. Like, it's only a job from here to there. Oh, I got an Uber the other day and it was this price. And yeah, I just want to kind of break that stigma. I want to show as much kind of exposure to the meter, because people think that meters in taxis are this mythical thing that's like... that like we can somehow manipulate. And you know, there's plenty of videos I've got planned and in the pipeline where I want to show some typical taxi journeys across London, like bread and butter journeys, and you know, things like, you know, we've had a meter update, so I want to share a little bit about that meter update, how it all works, and just generally how, you know, we are very heavily regulated by Transport for London. So I've gone off a little bit on a tangent there, but it kind of ties in with what you were saying about, you know, the Uber and the meter, really.
we go off on tangents quite a lot on here, so I won't worry about that. I mean, my experience is, because I used to do quite a lot of travelling on trains to get to meeting with licensing authorities, because that's what I do, and you know, a lot of the time the licensing site wasn't necessarily the town hall. It was somewhere a little bit more remote, usually with better sort of access for the vehicles. And I, what I always found, if I was at a train station and I could jump into a black cab and say, take me to this place, this depot, and they'd know where it was. And the question I always got, and I, you know, you still get it from time to time with private hires, is well, I don't know where that is. What's the postcode? And I was like, well, I don't really know. I've got no idea. Yeah. You know, I'm from up near Manchester. I'm down in Basingstoke. I don't know what the postcode of your
well, the same thing depot. When people will get in my cab, they do that and they go, oh, I can give you the postcode. I'm like, no, just give me the street. Like, it's so much easier. Like, postcode might, because it might be trying to lead me round like a one-way system or whatever, when I could drop you, you know, 5 minutes quicker, because I know that you can just get out and walk across the road or whatever. Yeah, it's one of those things. I think on the Uber front, like the one benefit it has brought is that, I mean, we've had taxi apps before Uber came onto the scene, and what it's done though is that I think it has sort of made taxis shape up their game a bit by adopting credit cards and things like that. It's definitely the way it's going to go. I mean, it's not a nice thing for cabbies who might have been in this game for, you know, decades, and they have had times where it's been cash. I get that, but you got to look at society as a whole. Who really deals with cash? Like, everyone gets paid as a bank transfer. Probably 90% of the world just gets paid straight into the bank. They never see cash. So it only makes sense to go that way. And I think Uber's kind of definitely pushed us drivers to have that. And I think that has been a savior for the taxi trade.
Yeah, well, that was interesting, that, because you're not the sort of stereotypical cabbie, really, in what you think. When you picture cabbie, it's usually sort of an older person than yourself. Is there a sense...
I'd like to generalise.
Yeah. What's it been like from your experience going into that sort of world as a relatively young man? I mean, is there that sort of sense of community, that cabbie community in London? Is there like communication points, like forums and message boards and things that you communicate on? And what was it like for you to sort of integrate into that community?
Yeah, I was quite surprised, because you think, wow, there's people been out for like years and that, and then you just get your badge and you know what I mean, you got quite fresh young butter boy, as we call as the new drivers.
And, butter boy.
You know these terminologies, all the cabbie lexicography.
Butter boy. Where does that come from?
Butter boy. So there's a couple of ideas where the etymology of it is, but it comes from, some people say he is but a boy, so he's just a boy.
I see.
Some people say it's a butter boy is someone who, when they get their badge, they steal all the bread and butter work from older cabbies. So like, they're so eager and they steal a lot of the work. So it's generally a terminology for a new cab driver. I don't know how long it lasts, but I don't know if it's until your first license renewal or your second license renewal until you can shake the term off as butter boy. But no, I think because we've got the knowledge, that kind of sets the playing field. That's like the, okay, you've done the knowledge. We've all got that camaraderie. I suppose it's the same. Anyone who's been through, like, say, military training or whatever, like, say, no, Navy SEAL training, then they've all gone through that process together. So that's kind of sets the playing field. I'm sure behind my back, because of what I do on YouTube, there probably is a lot of cab drivers who don't like what I do. But you're going to get haters in any walk of life,
love,
you know? Yeah, exactly.
But it's interesting you say that, you compare it to military training, and obviously you're not there going over obstacle courses and things like that. But I was reading a study recently, it's from the early noughties, and some neuroscientists did a lot of tests on London cabbies, and there's regions of the brain relating to memory that are significantly changed in cabbies compared to the normal population. Have you noticed your memory has changed, your ability to...
My memory is shocking. No, honestly, it is. But the way it works when you do the knowledge is that it's just how you remember stuff, how you retain stuff, that I think makes it better. I think my kind of spatial memory, like where I've left my keys or something, I very rarely lose anything. I'll go, like, I'll have a little mild moment of panic. I'll go, it's not in that pocket. And my brain just goes, left them on the side credenza in the kitchen or whatever. And it just kind of goes backwards. But yeah, no, those studies are correct. It grows the region of the brain called the hippocampus, which is kind of like short-term memories, which I suppose placing objects and stuff would be along those lines. I'm actually having a brain scan on Friday, as it happens, so as part of the cabbie study. Yeah, so Spears Lab at University College London, they're doing a research into Alzheimer's and dementia, and hopefully that maybe cab drivers might have this key to kind of unlocking, you know, what, how does, you know, Alzheimer's and dementia affect people? So they'd be scanning my brain and hopefully we'll get some good results. Hopefully there'll be something inside of there.
Oh, that'd be, are you going to do a video about that, or are you sort of having to do?
Yeah, no, I would like to try and cover it. I mean, for selfish reasons as well, because I actually had a head injury when I was like in my teens, which was near fatal. And I've actually got pretty crap genes as well, in the fact that I've actually got two copies of the, there's a particular gene that is like a hallmarker for developing Alzheimer's. And I've inherited one from my dad and I've inherited one from my mum. So basically it means I'm about 20 times, I'm 20 times more likely to develop Alzheimer's. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. I know that for, I've got Alzheimer's running my family, so
yeah,
I'm waiting
as well. Actually, I might have those genes as well. I might research that. After.
Yeah, we're going away testing ourselves now.
One thing I want to look
at, 23 and me. Yeah.
One thing I wanted to ask about, Tom, is the this sort of journey from being a kid to deciding you wanted to be a taxi driver, and I hope it's to do with The Getaway, because I did watch that video of yours playing The Getaway. Because that was the way that you approached that video. For those the listeners that don't know, Tom does a really interesting video on a PlayStation game called The Getaway, which is basically like Grand Theft Auto, but based around London. And I remember it coming out and being like absolutely giddy, because it was in London and it was an English thing. Yeah, and we're driving on the left-hand side instead of on the right, and I'd be seeing cars that I saw around the streets and stuff. And the way that you approach it in the video, and the way that you said you played that game almost like adhering to the traffic, using your indicators and stuff like that, that's how I did it.
Yeah.
I was a sucker for realism. I wanted something that was realistic. I didn't want to sail off bridges. I wanted to drive a bus round and pull it into bus stops and see if I could do that. So, I mean, and you did sort of mention, I don't know whether it was tongue-in-cheek, but that was sort of your first into transporting people. What was the journey from sort of I want to be a taxi driver? Obviously you mentioned about the breakup. Was there any sort of childhood desires to do that kind of stuff, or was it very impulsive, the decision to do something like that?
I've kind of always had a bit of like an insight or a curiosity for kind of direction and things. So like, you know, when I was like in my teens, you would go out on our bikes and you would just like go around the estate, and then you'd go to nearby towns and you would join them up. And I liked, there's actually there's a word for it, and it's terra incognita, which basically, like, if ever you've played a video game and you have a map, but you only start on a small section, and as you expand on the world, the map gets bigger. And for me, that's what I love. Like, whenever I go on holiday, whenever I move to a new area or whatever, it's this little map where I'm like, right, I've got this little tiny spot, and then it just gradually expands outwards. And so when I came across the knowledge of London, how I came across it was that I was doing a shitty sales job. I don't know if I can swear there, so we can put another word in. I was doing a not so nice sales job, and I was staying with a friend from university at the time. So I'd already done my degree, and I somehow went well off course and was in this sales job selling TVs for Samsung somehow. And his dad, who was ex-police, was then a London cab driver, and he told me about this thing called the knowledge, and you have to go out and learn these blue books. And I thought, you know, just the idea of completing these books, these blue books, sound pretty fun in itself. That's like a little scavenger hunt. So even if I complete these runs, 320 runs across London, I should have a pretty good understanding of London. And I always used to get lost in London. I used to think I knew where I was going, but I was like, if I complete these, I'll have a good idea. And that's just got to be a skill in itself, right? And then I got into it, and then I started to learn a bit more about it. And it just so happened that it sort of came up at the time with the breakup of the girlfriend, that was kind of like, well, you know what? There's actually a viable career at the end of this, so I might as well, you know, go for it.
So I've just got the MD messaging me about something. So sorry, we'll edit this bit out, but. And we'll pick it up.
Every time we've recorded a podcast recently, he'll just stop. Well, he's typing, we'll just edit this bit.
He's not said anything to me all day, and then as soon as I get on this recording, he's like, can you send me this, that, and the other? I'm like, yeah, okay.
Man, this can be a little clip. We can put this out.
This can be part of my rant. Well, I can't rant about the MD, can I? Come on.
All right, well,
can't do anything like that. We've got to keep it. The knowledge is, to me, something that is completely impossible. I don't understand how anyone can do it. Like, and I'd learned that many. I know obviously I've got experience with knowledge tests, in the sense of we build them for some customers and we see varying different levels of questions. Nothing comes close to the level of detail that you guys have got to do. you did a really interesting video on the sort of red line system, and you spoke about some changes to the knowledge test, or proposed changes, which we'll let you talk about because I know you have some opinions on those. But how did you do it? Like, what was your way of absorbing that? Was it just getting your head in an A to Z, or was it A to Z? I went all American then. A to Z. or was it, did you actually just go out? Because I find the best way to, because I find it quite liberating knowing your way around a city. Like, when you feel like, I know my way around this, I feel quite good about it. And the way that I learn is just by driving around it and trying. How did you find was the best way and the most effective way for you to learn all of those routes?
There is like a specific kind of structure that we go through in London, and I alluded to it earlier in the fact that it's blue books. Now, the blue books were actually set up by the Public Carriage Office, I think, in like the 19th century. It goes really far back since the formation of the knowledge, since about 1865. And there's 320 runs in total, and the idea of those runs is they're quite strategic in how they're designed. So by doing all 320 of them, you get a very good exposure to the 6 mile radius of Charing Cross. That is the knowledge area that we learn. So by doing those, firstly, what you have to do is you have to physically go out and run them. So you have to go and drive them on a moped or in a car, see the streets, and obviously the book will have all the different where you turn left, turn right, and you have to remember every single street. And then once you get to the end of that first run, you then recall all the streets that you've just seen. Then you would go home and then you would pen it up on your map. So you've kind of got three things going on there. You've got the actual street names you have to remember. You've got how you would then see them on the street. And then you've also got the map at home. So you combine all three of those things. And then as you evolve through the knowledge, once you do complete those 320 runs, that's kind of like your phrase book for London. That's like your starting point to just give you an overview. After that, then you then have to start formulating your own routes, and that's when you start going out and learning points. But between the three of them, what it's a combination of all of them, and that is physically already calling runs or road names, map work, and actually driving them on the street. Because only when you go and drive on the street do you get an idea of like, oh, there's a point there, or I can drop them off there, or I can use this next road to turn around. Then you come back, pen it up on the map, and yeah, and just repeat.
So I've seen a few videos, Tom, of people learning the knowledge, and they'll be out on like a moped or a bike or something, and they'll have the map there too. So were you one of those going out doing that?
I didn't have that because I had quite a far commute into London. My commute was about an hour, right? So I had to get an hour into London. I had to come down the M11 and yeah, so one of those little flimsy plastic boards. I don't think would have held up to 70 mile an hour speeds on the M11. So I had like a little tank bag, and I didn't have the map up there. I'd only have like my notes up and stuff, because I'd go home and then do my map work once I went home. Because I was of the mind that I didn't necessarily need to see the map on the street, because the idea was getting the map inside of here. So I didn't want to constantly be referring back to it. But I mean, there's all different ways of doing it. But yeah, that's one of the cool sights I love seeing in London, is some of the knowledge board, the scooters, and
yeah, you're spotting a mile off.
Yeah, yeah. And some people say it's a rarer sight now. I think they're still just out and about as much, but they, like me, because of the congestion charging times, you have to do it quite late at night usually. Because then you don't have to pay congestion charging. And also it's quieter, it's easier to get around, so it makes more sense.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about this. I know you said about the runs and stuff, and they're sort of set in place. There's a lot of issue with the low traffic neighbourhoods at the moment in London, isn't there? Are they having an effect on the runs, or like, are they affecting, like, you go, oh, I'll go this way, and then you find like, oh, it's been blocked off or whatever? Is it becoming a real problem?
I don't know how the hell the knowledge students are dealing with it. I mean, it just sounds awful. Like, some drivers now will say like, oh, it's so much easier because like for instance, in one area in London, you've got the borough of Islington, where they've kind of, there's basically no like cut throughs anymore. It is just stick to the main roads.
Right.
So the older drivers will say, well, it's easier because you haven't got to remember all these different cut throughs because you've got less streets to remember, or less options, which I guess is right in some ways. But the trouble with the knowledge is that it's very live in how they assess you, in the essence that I think you only have, it's about a 6 month grace period, that if the road changes, you have to update that within that 6 months. And so examiners are really hot on it. They are up to date with all the latest closures and changes. So if you're still calling a street that doesn't work, they'll know about it. So you're always having to just keep your ear to the ground and go, oh, this has changed. Like when I was on the knowledge, one of the biggest ones was Bank Junction in the city of London. It's a junction that's now only accessible to buses and cycles. But even that, trying to readjust my calling just to navigate that one junction, I found really, really hard, because it's like, you're trying to make it like muscle memory. You're trying to make it automatic, right? And if someone then turns around and goes, actually, no, that's not how it works anymore. Like, we are creatures of habit. Something only minor has got to change in your house or like at home, and like how your routine is set up, and it just goes wild. You're like, what happened there? And I think that's the biggest problem, is them trying to keep up to date with it. And then in the cab, like, you know, half the stuff I learned probably is all gone. Like, you know, I'm really worried when I get out of central London and I go more south, some of these little cut throughs and routes, I can't rely upon the knowledge I once had, because if I've not been down there in 6 months, it could be entirely different.
Do they have any sort of refresher courses or anything like that? Because I know there's companies that help people get through and train for the knowledge, but do you do refresher courses as well to keep up to date?
No. Once you get your badge, that's the cool thing with it. You get your badge, and it's kind of in our best interest, because the job is pretty hard if you're not up to date with what's going on. Like, yeah. if anything does close, like in an area that I generally use quite a lot, I make a really intentional thing of like going around there, you know, turn my light off and have a good look around it, because, you know, there's still certain drivers like, oh, don't go to the City of London because they've changed the streets, I can't get on with it, it's just awful. But I find that the key to it is, if I work out those closures exactly, if someone does hail me in an area that is quite bad, you've got to know your ins and outs. And because the sooner I can get off that job, the sooner I can collect the meter, the starting fare, and the meter is more efficient if I can turn over jobs. So,
It's in your own best interest.
It's in best interest, really, yeah.
What's it like being a passenger now, Tom, since you've done the knowledge? Because you must be a passenger every now and again when you have a night off and go for a drink. Are you going, I wouldn't have gone this way. Oh, God, he's going this way. Is it anything like that? I always imagine it must be a bit different jumping in the back of a cab.
No, never, because you learn it from different people. It's no different than, you know, when I speak to some of my colleagues in the cab and I'm like, oh, yeah, I always use this road. If they want to go to Euston Station or wherever, I always go, da-da-da-da. And they're like, huh? Nah, I'd go this way or whatever. And you're like,
Everyone's so got understanding their own way of doing things.
Different interpretation. And I always see that, like, taxi driving, it's kind of, I like the passengers that give you a lot of trust in what you do. You know, it's the ultimate form of delegation, right? They get in and say, take me to such and such. They don't want to micromanage you and say, oh, can you go this way, that way? That's not what we're for. So it's the same with a driver. I know that they're doing it with their best interest. They're trying to get me there in the best way possible. I had a lady, I think it was just on Monday, actually, as it happens. She got in and I didn't even get a how are you out of her. I was like, oh, how are you doing? She just went, want to go this way, this way, this way. She hadn't even stepped in the cab. I'm like, huh? And on the drive, she's going, yes, left here, right here. And I'm like, am I going left here? Am I? And then you just sort of, I don't really sort of like bite back at that. I'm just like, yep, okay, yep, we'll do that way. And I'm like, because she wants to go that way, it's what she wants to do. But I just know it kind of gives me a giggle. It gives me a bit of a kick, because it's like, well, I know that in her life, she's probably can't trust anyone. Like, she's probably like a micromanager at her work. She's probably like, Bob, I told you to do this, but you didn't do the X, Y, Z as I told you exactly. Like, doesn't give anyone a level of autonomy that they might deserve, you know?
Sounds like a laugh riot.
Yeah.
Yeah, whenever I get into it, I just want to be able to tell you where I want to go and then not have to think about it anymore. Because having to think and talk about it is like, I can never get more stressed out when I get into somewhere and they're like, they don't know where it is. Like when you're trying to get, particularly when it's somewhere I don't know the way to. Like, the nearest city to us is Manchester, and you're often meeting socially or for work-related things at places where you've never been before. You just know the name of them. And then when you book a taxi and it's like, oh, you're going to have to direct me, it's a bit like, well, I don't know. So you end up on your map at the back of, you know, trying to direct a taxi driver around it. And there is this argument that we've touched on, and you've obviously done this video on, of whether the knowledge is necessary anymore. And, you know, obviously the private hire side of the trade will often say, no, it's not, because we've got sat-navs. And I'm just a bit like, well, sat-navs are only any good if you know what to put in it. So if you know what postcode you're going for, if I know the name of a bar, for example, that I'm meeting somebody at, I'm not really going to know the postcode of that bar. And then that sort of pit time where you've got to then key it into the sat-nav. And I still think there's a place for it, and I'm sure you do too.
My analogy that I always draw on people is like, it's no different than a professional chef, right? I could probably cook a meal, right, if I followed a recipe, effectively following a sat-nav. It might take me longer. It might not taste as good. I might fumble a bit and, you know, make a bit of a mess in the kitchen. Whereas a professional chef is like, yeah, I'll do that, pinch of that, da-da-da-da, bang, there you go, there's your meal. And it's the same with, like, when it comes to driving. They've done that process enough times, countless amounts of times, that they haven't got to think about it. It's just in that, I can't remember what it is, it's like type 2 brain, where it's like no different than saying, oh, what colour is the sky? Blue. Okay, what way to Euston? Mm. Boom, Shaftesbury Avenue, Bloomsbury Street, bang, up Gower Street, Torrington Place, and left into Gordon Square and into the forecourt, bang.
See, I don't even know the street names in my own town.
I don't, yeah, I direct myself around by pubs.
Me.
It's like, yeah, you go up Main Street and then you go past the pub and then down past the library and then...
Past the co-op.
Yeah,
that's how I do it. So what was the big impact? I mean, obviously there was a huge impact in the pandemic during 2020 and into 21 with the trade. Obviously you occupied yourself with YouTube, and I imagine that would have been sort of your sanctuary in many ways. What did the rest of the trade do in that time? I mean, we literally just dropped. I mean, particularly in London, you rely a lot on tourism down there, a lot of footfall in the major cities. That was obviously all pretty much illegal to do anything like that. What did your colleagues down there do? What was the response to something like that?
Yeah, I think a lot of them went back, if they had other skills or trades, they went back onto like building sites and stuff like that. I know that a few colleagues as well, a lot of them became Tesco delivery drivers, Tesco, Sainsbury's, all stuff like that. Yeah, just whatever they could to just get the income in, you know, if they've got taxis to pay for and stuff. I know we did get a bit of a finance break on some of our cabs, but everyone's circumstances are different. Just whatever they can, just to get the income sort of rolling in, really. I was out there. I took about 2 months off initially, and I did a little bit on the YouTube and that. And then once it all calmed down a little bit, I'm like, what am I doing at home? I should at least try and get some work, you know, at least try. You know, if I'm sitting at home just twiddling my thumbs. So I did, and there was like... It was so weird driving around, but there was also like the only a few cab drivers that were out as well. So we all sort of, one rank I ranked up in like Chelsea, like around Sloane Square, like I became quite friendly with the drivers that were there because it was us same drivers that were sat there every day, basically. And so it was a little bit stir crazy, but a weird thing that I'm glad to kind of experience and go through in some ways.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, but... Yes, I think the industry is going through so many changes at the moment. And I know from watching your videos, you've got an electric cab, haven't you?
Yeah.
How?
Oh, by the way, that's what the name of your podcast should now become. It shouldn't be "What time are you on till, mate?" It should be "Is this cab electric?" That is honestly, that is the new one. No one says "What time are you on till?" or "Have you been busy, mate?" The worst one, and every electric driver will vouch for it. They just go, "Is this cab electric?" Like, yeah.
I think that's going to be the name of this
episode.
How
many miles does it do? Yeah. Literally, it is endless. And the way the conversation goes, I soon get it off the topic, and I go, "Oh, have you got an electric car?" Then they're like, "Oh yeah, I've got a Tesla." Da, 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 da. And then I let them run on because it's largely a question so they can talk about the fact they support an electric car.
That strikes me as the sort of thing electric vehicle owners would do. Not that I'm generalizing again, but
no, again, and Teslas are wicked vehicles, but I don't get the "what time you're on till" anymore now.
Yeah, we're still getting up here. Yeah. We still do. Yeah, it takes a couple of decades for it to perforate up here. We still say "at what time you're on till" and "have you been busy?"
We
still
ask that question. We actually say hello to people in the street, and I know that's a bit strange down
there. Yeah, no, how does that work? Like, that's weird.
It's bizarre, actually. Because I mean, when I go down to London, I have to consciously not do that. Because honestly, it makes people... the rule of thumb up here is if you make eye contact with someone for anything longer than a couple of seconds, you've got to do the "I am a" kind of nod.
Right.
Or at least in the morning.
Yeah, or something.
You never say afternoon.
Yeah, and walking past a stranger on the street, obviously it's a bit more sparse up here, so there's not as many as you would do walking through central London, but you do the sort of the hello nod. When I first went down to London, when I was probably about 16, 17, I remember just nodding at people as I've been doing all my life, and people looking at me like I was clinically insane.
I suppose there's that many people in London, you'd just be...
I wasn't doing it when I was walking down Oxford Street, but it's like if you have that sort of awkward
wait,
like if you're in a lift or something, or if you're on the escalator and there's like one person coming the other way and you've got that awkward sort of 10 seconds of eye contact, you have to fill that with something.
Yeah.
No, not in London.
I think it's like that with every facet of like life. Like I've alluded to it earlier, but I'm like a previously a motorbiker, right? And anywhere like motorbikers have the nod, like say anywhere you drive around a motorbike outside of London, you'll nod at each other as you go past, right? And but no, doesn't happen in London, right? When I come out of London, I see like another taxi or like another electric taxi, like where I drive around the country or whatever. We put a little hand up. Like, oh yeah, we both got electric taxis, all right? London,
all
no.
friends,
yeah, all friends, yeah.
Electric taxi friend, but
yeah,
they are expensive though, aren't they? I know we were joking about saying it'll take a couple of decades to come up here, but. I suppose we're not joking about that. It is real a thing. I know.
I don't see any up here.
I was reading about Coventry recently, and obviously that's the birthplace of the London Black Cab, really, Coventry.
Yeah.
And they've now got the problem where they've invested all this money in the electric charging infrastructure, but no one can afford to buy the cabs. I know LEVC, they have quite some reasonable finance deals, don't they?
Yeah.
Is that, have you managed to buy yours, or are yours on finance?
Yeah, it's still on finance. What, I'm on a higher purchase, which is quite annoying because it's obviously quite a bit more expensive. But then I own it outright at the end of it.
That's the thing.
But yeah, I mean, what, I've had it for nearly 3 years now, and I've still got about 36 grand on it. I'm like, what? I've still got to pay that much more. It's insane.
But I was reading Taxi Point recently, and they were saying they've done some maths on it. And over 5 years, if you're doing fully electric, you'll save about 18 grand.
That's the thing. That's what convinced me over to it, because I was renting a diesel TX4, and I worked out, I just crunched it in a spreadsheet, that if sometimes you're doing like 5 day weeks, you will at least, I think 4 days was about the break even, and 5 days in comparison to a TX4, and 5 days was where you then start, because of petrol being cheaper, electric being cheaper, where you actually start to reap the benefits of, you know, it costing you less, basically. So if you're physically working the vehicle, then yes, the electric I found was cheaper, electric petrol generator, whatever. But if you're just coming out a couple of days a week here and there, then you're still better off with like an older diesel or something.
Yeah, I think that's one of the resistance that a lot of the older drivers have, because if they've only got a few years left, I was going to say a few years left in them, a few years left in the industry. It doesn't really make sense for them to make that switch.
No,
because by the time,
no, why would you,
like, your savings?
Yeah, you then stripe yourself up to then have to get it paid off in 5 years, and it's like, and you at a time when you want to be winding down, not working like loads of days of the week, you want to be sort of almost gearing up for retirement. You want to be doing less. So, I do sort of worry, and I think that's one of the things that's been exacerbated by this pandemic, is that there'll be like a big sort of clump of drivers that will retire maybe earlier than what they were gonna, because they haven't got a vehicle they can bridge that gap, if you will. Yeah.
It's one of the, it's like you say as well, people have already left and they've gone to be a delivery driver. So I think you're absolutely right with that. You're just going to have a big block of people leaving the industry, which will be good for you because you won't stop working. You'll just be.
Yeah, but it's not good for the industry in whole, is it? Because if people turn up to train stations, taxi ranks are empty, we're not providing a reliable service, they'll soon pull their phone out of the pocket and then start get. Doesn't matter how much it costs. If it's raining, they want to get home. They need some form of transport. So yeah, we just need to be as reliable as possible.
Yeah, technologies can be both a help and a hindrance, can't it, to licensed trade when it comes to that. I mean, one thing that I get asked about all the time is driverless vehicles. It's something that comes up a lot, because obviously people are trying it, Tesla are trying it, everyone, you know, Silicon Valley's doing this kind of stuff. What's the feel from you and your colleagues about driverless vehicles? Because obviously it's a very obvious threat to the livelihoods of cabbies. It's obviously a threat to us as a business as well, because business is, you know, background screening on taxi and private hire drivers. What's your sort of feel for that? I mean, it seems like sort of Star Trek distant future kind of stuff at the minute, but a lot of things that are currently happening now seem that way not that long ago. So I just wonder what your sort of feel is about that.
The technology is definitely there. It already exists. Tesla already has this technology. And you also got to look at automation as a whole. Like, there's lots of areas of society that has already been automated. You know, you've only got to go into Tesco's and there's now 8 like self-service checkouts. That is a form of automation in a way. But I think the stuff that's getting automated will be quite like stuff like that, very binary, easy to calculate stuff. It's like scan an item, away you go. And then you have someone oversee that. Maybe things like accountancy and that, because that's just all numbers and data, really. That's not... There's not as many variables to it. The problem with automations I can see, especially in a busy city like London, is how many variables there are. So people crossing the street, like you've probably had this before, like when you're driving down the road, if someone's crossing the street, you almost play this, or trying to cross the street, you almost play this mental game of chicken. You either slow up. Yeah, it sounds really crude. I'm not trying to run them over, but like,
oh no, we've all.
But you either slow up, so then that gives them the indication of, oh, I can cross the road now, or you speed up, so they go, oh, I better not cross the road, kind of thing. Like, not like aggressively or anything. And it's that kind of nuanced behaviour that I think automation has got a very long way to go before it can overcome some of those hurdles. I mean, some of the drivers in London believe that the restrictions to the roads, the cycle lanes going in, and the fact that it's all 20 mile an hour is kind of like an ominous kind of indication that is gearing us up for automated vehicles. So it might be sooner than we think, I don't know, but I think you'd have to deal with the pedestrian problem sort of first before you can truly automate.
Yeah, I think that's always the difficulty, because a lot of what you, when you learn to drive, not just learn to be a taxi driver, is it's all about preempting danger. And sort of the amount of times I'm like driving and I see a pedestrian and I think she's going to cross in a minute, or she's not seen me and she's going to turn, you know, and you can see it, can't you? Like walking up to zebra crossings, for example, I mean, you immediately sort of look to the left and the right to see, is anybody looking like they might cross over? It's going to take some pretty nifty technology to be able to do that, to be able to sort of match a human's level of preempting that kind of danger, because that's what everybody has to do. And I'm not sure an autonomous or a non-human driven car can do something like that.
Well, even if they do.
And I think to get the true benefit of automation as well, I think every vehicle or the majority of vehicles on the road have to be automated. If you only have like about 20% of vehicles that are automated, then you're not really getting any benefits there, 'cause it's still driving like everyone else. But where the benefits will be is things like when a traffic light turns green, there's no delay or lag in the vehicles. Like all vehicles, as soon as that light turns green, will all be synchronized to it and all be able to move off at the same rate. So there's no inefficiencies. But if you still have like, you know, 80% like normal drivers and 20%, then you're going to get one driver who's on their phone or going, oh, has it turned green? Oh, I'm not in gear. Oh, like, and that's when you get inefficiencies. It's all about an efficiency problem, I guess.
It doesn't sound appealing to me, though. No. Having a world of driverless vehicles. It's a bit dystopian.
Are you kidding? That sounds amazing. Like, just get in the back and be like, right, brilliant. I just put my feet up. At the detriment of my trade,
Yeah, I quite like the chats with the taxi drivers. I quite like the interaction. Well, I think that's come across evidently on all of these podcasts. But I think I quite like the idea of it. You know, it just seems a little bit sort of futuristic sci-fi movie for me. Everyone just
but it already exists in some ways. Remember, like when you look at the inside of like most modern cars now, the amount of technology and features there that wouldn't have been there say 20 years ago. You know, reversing cameras, speed limiters, cruise control. I've got like automatic wiper blades and automatic headlights. These are all forms of automation, and now very gradually, like it's not going to be like an overnight thing, but they'll gradually get to the point where I'm just operating the vehicle, right? Because I'm not having to do as many of these calculations. So it is coming in many different ways, not just like, oh, here's a vehicle that drives itself. It's like, no, they kind of do drive themselves in some ways because of the features they've got.
You're just supervising.
Yeah.
I'm just supervising my vehicle.
You need a supervisor's license.
Supervisor. Yeah, that's what we'll have to change, isn't it? Supervisor's licenses. But yeah, I think,
I mean, the only thing I was going to just talk about is the YouTube channel, really. I mean, it's proven very popular. I mean, I've obviously stumbled across it for obvious reasons, is the work that we do. What kind of subscribers do you get? Are they people that are interested in the sort of the taxi side, or are they interested in the London side, or is it a bit of both?
Yeah, all sorts. Like, and it kind of lends itself to some of the content that I make. Like, I get the odd people from like the gaming world, because I've made the odd videos where I use, I play video games that are set in London. So a few people come over from there. You get people who are kind of taxi enthusiasts. You get people who are London enthusiasts. It's really no like rhyme or reason as to who it is, really. And you get some people who have no clue about it whatsoever. And that would probably be my target audience that I want to try and target to, is people that don't know about taxi driving or London taxis. And the knowledge, and because that was my main impetus for starting it, was that I've done all this studying, and every London taxi driver has to do all this studying, go jump through all these hoops, get a specific vehicle, And once we've done that, we just become a driver. We're just blending with all the other drivers. I didn't want to lose that history or that enthusiasm that I put into the knowledge and the expertise that we have to go through. I want to see that sort of worldwide and keep that remaining, basically. So.
Perfect. So, and if you want, if people wanted to come and find you on YouTube, what would they be searching for?
I am Tom the Taxi Driver. I'm pretty well optimized on everything on the internet. So that's me on Instagram. I'm not on TikTok, but yeah, YouTube, Instagram. Yeah, I'll pop up everywhere, really. Apologies if there's any other taxi drivers called Tom. That I sort of
no, I think you might claim be for that one.
No, we'll obviously publicise it and we'll put the links out to all of your social media and your YouTube channel. I mean, I thoroughly enjoy watching your videos, not just taxi specific ones that, you know, the Uber one that I stumbled across, but like I said, the getaway one I thought was really interesting. And just a general get a bit of a peep behind what it's like to be a cabbie, and obviously a London cabbie is sort of an exaggerated version of a Hackney carriage driver in many ways. So it's been really interesting. I think it's really good, mate. And I'll be looking out for more content.
Perfect. Well, thanks very much for joining us, Tom. I think, we'll close it there.
Yep, wonderful. Thanks very much, Tom. Cheers.
Cheers, Tom.
Cheers, guys. Thanks a lot.
Right, so we really enjoyed having Tom on. It was a great interview. It was good to get some insights from him. And we mentioned to him we might actually go down to London at some point and use him in some other content. So we'd be quite excited to do that. Can't remember if we actually told him that, but Tom, if you're listening, we're going to use you for more content if you're happy to do so.
It's a good channel, so everyone should watch it. There's lots of, taxi related content, obviously, but there's also some sort of London tour guidey vibes to it as well.
Yeah, it is really good stuff.
It is good, and he's obviously puts a lot of effort into his videos. He's, you know, they're good quality.
I think he might put more effort in than we put into.
Yeah, he's a bit more seamless, I imagine, than us. And he does it on his own. We've
you
got
can
three
speak
people.
For yourself on that last podcast.
All right.
His cameras don't flick off.
You're not the one editing them.
But no, everyone go over to Tom the Taxi Driver and subscribe on YouTube. It's be well worth it. There's loads of good videos on there. And I thought it was a really good interview. It was interesting to hear how he got into it. So
we've not had any cabbies on before, so it was quite good to get some insights directly from people. And me and Ryan Ryan was thinking of the game, but we're thinking about introducing the game in a few months that cabbies can get involved in, so keep an eye out for that as well.
Teaser.
But speaking of games,
fact or bull?
Next up, we have the world-renowned fact or bullshit. So, Erin, get the slides up.
Can we retire this game after this now and start doing the taxi driver one instead? Because
we need to.
This game has been nothing but a disappointment to me since I started doing it. And
we will get the taxi driver game.
It's wholly unfair.
It's not wholly unfair. I don't have the scoreboard.
We don't need the score. We're terrible. It's single figures
for both of us. Yeah, neither of us do particularly well.
Who's done these then? Is this still Maria?
This is Maz. Crazy Maz.
Okay. Oh, I can't get him up on there.
Our tech designy person can't get PowerPoint up on the screen.
I'd like to see you try.
I'm not a marketeer.
I have, for the past four episodes, I have multitasked.
I'm sure marketeers need to have a grasp of the slide deck. Welcome to the podcast, Erin. I hope you're having fun.
Maybe this is why Lauren left, just because we casually abused her on the podcast.
We didn't. You did. No, I'm going in hard on Erin.
Fair enough. I casually abused her on the podcast. You did it during work.
It was unplayful, though, wasn't it?
Only playful. It was funny, though. Random comment while we're just waiting for Erin to sort herself out. What I've discovered recently is some of the comments that you make whilst you're changing a baby could be very heavily misconstrued if you were saying them to an adult. It just doesn't go down very well. It's like, stop struggling, it'll be over a lot quicker. Just open your legs.
Do you not think it would be...
Yeah, it means something to...
Babies would be a lot easier, I think, and I'm saying this as not a parent, so I might be talking out of turn here, but if babies were just born with like four words, how much, if it was just like food, poo,
drink,
pain, ouch, sleep. Yeah, if they could just do that, you'd know exactly what to do with them, and it'd be easy. Sleep, right, okay. Poo, okay, cool. That. None of this, what you're wailing at, let's try giving you whatever you like guess until we get it right.
Mm. It is difficult.
It's a design flaw.
Yeah, I have no sympathy for people with one child, I have to say.
Yeah, see, he's like this, isn't he? He's like, you've only got one? Oh, that must be easy.
Yes. Having one child, honestly, would be a dream. But I love all my children, and they don't tire me out or deprive me of sleep.
I think you should get rid of the one that's not identical.
The singleton.
My little P, Theo.
Oh.
Theo the girl.
They're all girls. She's Theodora. She's Theodorable.
Theodora.
Oh, no. You can't ever say that again.
What do you to say?
Theodorable.
She's Theodorable.
Theodorable.
Oh, that's cute.
I would like to clarify that I did not come up with that.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't build it, although I adopted it instantly. I adopted it instantly and enjoyed it thoroughly.
You'll be like that when you have your own children.
I won't be.
You will.
Theodorable.
It will change you. It will.
I still can't get over that picture, JP, and how good you look there. It does look like your little brother. Look at the difference.
I'm just beautiful.
Were.
Yeah, past tense.
So remember.
Can we replace that?
I'm just saving up my haircut. Can we
replace it with what he looks like now?
I'll attach that face to that. I'll attach that face to your face.
Yeah. Right, go on then. We're ready. Fat or bullshit.
Have we mentioned, by the way, that it's sponsored by Taxi Point yet?
No, because...
we forget every time.
At the end, do it at the end.
We're going to have to do it.
No, because we do the coming up bit.
Oh,
we?
Yeah, we do. Okay.
Right. So, do you want to read that out for us, Erin?
Okay. Question one. Jet lag feels worse if you travel from west to east.
Now, this could be... Let's approach this logically.
Yeah, there is...
There'll be a time difference element to this. Now, if you don't lose a night's sleep, you don't really get jet lag, do you? So if you travel and you've not travelled overnight, per se, and you land at a reasonable time where you can go to bed at the same time that you would have done, you avoid jet lag. If you come back and you basically have to stay, either go to bed at 10 o'clock in the morning or stay awake, that's when you get it. So there could be some logic to this. Because my sister flew back from Australia recently and she didn't get jet lag when she was here because she arrived and went straight to bed at the same time.
That's what happened to me. I set off in the morning from here and got to Australia at night, their night time, so I didn't have any jet lag.
Right. So that I think it could be true, this.
I'm going to say false because I suppose that it really just depends on how long you're travelling for and what time you arrive.
Because the biggest time differences are east to west and north to south, aren't they? Because we have the same... Are we not in the same time as, like, South Africa?
Yeah. I was going to say there is no time differences north to south.
Yeah, exactly. So this makes sense, then, that it could be... I'm going to say true.
I'm going to say false.
Do you know?
No.
No?
What would you say, then? You get involved.
I think it's true as well.
Get in! I love this game.
So science has proved that jet lag feels worse if you travel from west to east. Isn't that not what the question was? I'm sure it said from east to west.
Let me go back. No, west to east.
Yeah.
Don't try and wriggle out of it. It's such a... Just when you get...
I read it wrong.
Okay. Our internal clock has a natural cycle of sleep/wake modes that is slightly longer than 24 hours. Travelling from west to east makes the day shorter, while travelling from east to west makes the day longer, making it easier for the brain to adapt.
So it's nothing like what we said, but we were right.
Yeah.
So we'll take the W.
Take the W. Take the win. Is that what? Yeah. Did you just shorten win to W?
No, because that's how you write it on things like Twitter. Take the L if you've lost. Take the W if you've won.
Okay, next question.
You really are pissy just because you've lost that one.
No, what annoys me is when people
hairy man. Let's get on with it.
All right.
One syllable word.
Give up.
Next question. Question two.
False.
60% of the lakes on Earth are located in America.
I don't think that's true. I could just be chatting absolutely.
America's a big country.
It is, but I also think
is this
there is
America
60% of
or
lakes
the
are
Americas.
Somewhere.
Yeah. America,
that's,
I presume.
Yeah, because is it North
America?
Is it South America or the Americas? I still don't think it's...
I think it would be...
Well, where else do you think there's lots of lakes? Because there is a lot of them in America.
There is a lot of them in America, I suppose.
Not many in Europe.
Big countries. And
I think there is.
Not that many.
There's not the Great Lakes, granted, but there's lots of little lakes.
Is there?
Yeah.
Where?
Because Russia's in Europe, you've got to think. You fit America into Russia like four times.
Yeah.
Yeah, but is there lots of lakes in Russia?
Yeah.
Are you just saying that because it's a country? Or have you got any? That's what I mean.
I'm still saying false.
It does seem a bit much, to be honest. 60%.
Well, but it is like you say, whether it's the class in America, the Americas, because that is what?
And there's a lot up in Alaska as well, isn't there?
Mm.
And Canada has a lot, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. This is a tough one. This.
Yeah.
Because it does sound...
They need to specify whether it's United States.
Well, I'm treating this as the Americas, and if it's not...
Over half the amount of lakes.
Otherwise, you should say the US. Oh, if it's the US, that can't be right. Because that's too much.
But I feel like...
Well, it'd have Americas, wouldn't it? The Americas, if it was the Americas.
But America isn't a country.
No, it's not.
It's the island. It's the land mass. Yeah.
I presume. Continent. Yeah. That's what it
right.
is.
I might give two depending on what it is. If it's the US, no. If it's the Americas, true.
Right, I'm going false.
What would you say?
Bullshit. It's bullshit. Actually Canada. So it was US. We're gonna have to have words with Maria.
I'm not having that as a loss.
Okay.
Because I actually caveated this for that.
Yeah.
So it's actually Canada. The second largest country on the planet is home to 60% of the planet's lakes. Still not amazed? How about we rephrase? The number of lakes in Canada is bigger than the rest of the lakes on the planet combined.
Amazed. How about we rephrase?
What?
I'm not mocking you, so, I'm mocking Maria.
So 60% are in Canada alone?
Yeah.
Which is in America.
I believe that. There's a lot of national parks. There's a lot of national parks.
Yes, that makes
parks.
Sense.
Yeah.
We're still not taking it as a loss, though.
Question three.
False.
Stop doing that.
In 2021, the number of licensed taxi and private hire vehicles grew by 15.9%.
It's got to be false. Good bullshit.
No, because if it's false, then that means she's pulled 15.9% out of
nowhere.
These
are the ones
and these
really
are the ones that
piss
me off.
She said she was going to do this to you. I told her to.
You've got to think
well,
about
she asked me if she
2021 and that
yeah, but
time.
If what Maria typically does with these, Erin, is she goes, false, it's actually 15.8%. And that
to be
winds
fair to
me
Maria,
up.
She hasn't actually done that. It was Lauren who did that. Maria hasn't followed suit.
I'm going to say false.
I'm saying false just because it seems very strange.
And yeah. I figured they dropped.
I agree.
Yeah.
The number of licensed taxi and private hire vehicles actually fell by 15.9% between 2020 and 2021.
Yeah, that makes more sense. That's better.
Yeah, I can deal with that.
I'm doing all right at this. Is that it? Have we ended on a high there?
I think so, unless there's another one. Check. No, that's everything.
Oh, Twitter handle's wrong.
It's all right, they can't see it. We're not filming.
Well, when Erin does her wonderful edits.
I'll change it and put it at the end.
That was an alright one, that.
What?
That fact or BS.
Yeah. Is that because you got two right?
Well, I got two right because they were better.
Yeah.
Some of them have been stupid.
Are you not wanting to get rid of it now, then?
No, I want to get rid of it. I mean, that were alright. But I want the game to be... I want there to be guests playing games.
We do want guests playing games, so...
I don't think we can get rid of it. I think filler content.
It's all about the content.
This is highly strategized, put together, thought provoking content. This is not filler content.
It's all filler content.
Yeah, by definition.
It's all about the content.
Yeah. We need to refresh. So what are the competitions then? We've got the 1500 in a month for bad things to happen to JP on Twitter.
Yeah, bad things will happen to me if we achieve 1500 followers on Twitter by next
month. We've got Crap Sweets is like. Retweet and follow the tweet that we're going to put out with this episode on. So if you retweet it and then you follow us, anyone that does that is in with a chance of winning a box of crap sweets.
Absolutely.
Is that it? Have we got any other comps? Because we're competition crazy.
I feel like we need one more.
Like what? Yeah, two seems odd, doesn't it? But no, I don't think.
What can we do? I don't know what the competition can be, but the result could be we make JP do a. Trending dance on TikTok.
Yes, that's a good one.
No, that is like my worst.
Would you do it?
I'd do it with him.
Okay, you have to do it with him because JP's already doing a makeover sort of thing, isn't he?
If we get 1500, if we get 1500 followers, which if we do, I'll be more than happy. I don't know what all this is, but
yeah, I want you to do a trend. I want you to do a TikTok trend.
No. I've actually fallen down the TikTok rabbit hole. I was always very much against.
Oh, mate. It's lethal.
It is lethal.
You can lose days.
Yeah. It's probably... I wouldn't say it's the most heavily used bit of social media I have, but when I've fallen down the rabbit hole, I spend more time on that than I have on anything else.
It's tailor-made for me, though, because it's literally short hits of
attention.
Exactly,
for me, yeah.
So I'll just watch
Well, that's
more.
The world that's been...
Like, that's what the world's done to our brains.
20, 30 second videos. Yeah. And if it's anything longer, it doesn't go anywhere in the first 5 seconds, I'm off.
Yeah.
But I can't go on when I get in bed now because I'll be up till 3 a.m.
Yeah.
I just cannot stop.
I have a routine of just going to bed and watching TikToks. Honestly.
Yeah. I started doing it when I first downloaded it and then decided not to.
Maybe if we get a certain number of followers on TikTok, then we'll get you to do a trend dance.
Yeah, all right.
Agreed. And
we're not doing one of them like outfit change thirst traps. I think that'll get more people interested.
You're a thirst trap.
Yeah. All definitely.
Right, yeah. Okay. Well, that's it then. So TikTok followers. How many do we want? We can't be that many for that. 100. You get 100 TikTok followers.
Yeah.
JP will do a trend to be decided by Erin, the TikTok whiz.
Social media whiz.
Done. Right. Cool.
Right. Well, thanks for listening, guys. Like we said, it's not the normal Twitter handle. It's actually now at Taxi Podcast. I think we've got a bit of a monopoly on that. That is a good Twitter handle to have. But yeah, we're looking to try and get 3,000 followers on there. If we get to 1,500 followers, Erin and Ryan are going to come up with some tortuous way to abuse me, which I'm going to love. I can see it now that I'm going to really, really enjoy that. But yeah, so follow us on at Taxi Podcast. We're also going to be having some content on YouTube going out, and we'll be starting on TikTok. Get 100 on TikTok, and we'll make myself look stupid.
I want Erin to pick that though, because she'll know like what the latest trends are.
Yeah,
you go viral.
I'll consider.
I hope
yeah.
not. I hope not.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening.
See you. Bye.
Oh, I can't wait. I hope we end up prancing around.